go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Go off and running on this 17th day of March 2023. Tikora and Aaron Gabrales. Never mind. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky's any real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe round. And, of course, if you go there, you know, if you wander over right now after listening live, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky and Theo. Hey, y'all! And capably moderated by Horn Chief, Mathematician Chief, Agronomist, and Bud Trimmer. Emeritus Roger in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. It is, in fact, St. Patrick's Day, and as it falls on a Friday, that probably means that it's amateur night wherever you are, especially in the United States of America. It's funny that this is another of those holidays that the United States has pretty much made. Cinco de Mayo is just mostly was just mostly another day in Mexico, but thanks to capitalist marketing, it's become a day for getting obnoxiously loaded on bad margaritas made with bad tequila at like, you know, Chili's or whatever. And the same with St. Patrick's Day. I've seen posts all day long saying, don't be calling it St. Paddy's Day. Tis an insult. So I shan't. And we made that one, too. A big hullabaloo over St. Patrick's Day is something that happened among the Irish diaspora, starting in New York and moving on to places like Chicago and so forth. And now, of course, Cinco de Mayo is a big deal in Mexico, and Cinco de Mayo is a big deal in Ireland because there's, and St. Patrick's Day in Ireland because there's a dollar to be made. And this goes hand in hand with Halloween, which has also gone around and about the globe. I remember our pal Robert in Australia talking about how it had morphed into a thing up over down under in Australia. Oh, well, but there's, you know, there's nothing uniquely American about that because, well, every religious holiday that we have, Christmas, was a veneer over an ancient, a more ancient holiday, Saturnalia. Easter's on its way, and that comes around on April the 9th, and that's just a veneer as well. I guess that's just how it works, huh? But nonetheless, happy St. Patrick's Day to you all. I just remembered something earlier, going back to St. Patrick's Day 2020. Back then, one of my favorite places to go over in Fayetteville, the Grove, which was over top of Secret Sandwich Society. I had been back home from doing The Lion in Winter for about a month and a half, and was contemplating what would happen in the next few months. And I remember dancing with a dear friend of mine at the Grove as it was becoming abundantly apparent that a pandemic had been allowed to run loose in the United States of America by a certain jiggling adipose wad of insecurities and orange pigmentation. And she was one of my best friends. She has since moved to South Carolina, Stan, as a matter of fact. But we were dancing, and she looked at me and said, "I don't think we will ever dance like this again." And she was right. She was right. Ah, look, there's longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky entering the room. Of course, he's a third stage guild navigator and has folded space to become Man Cave for this St. Patrick's Day. I saw a beautiful strawberry shortcake in the shape of a serpent today to celebrate sort of the pagan response to St. Patrick's Day. It's an interesting holiday because St. Patrick's Day is actually named for it's a big deal in terms of Irish lore and whatnot, but the fact of the matter remains that the guy we know as St. Patrick wasn't Irish at all. No, he was British. St. Patrick, if you want to look at the broad scheme of things, St. Patrick actually represents one of the earliest manifestations of the British will, the British desire to impose its will upon the Emerald Isle. But that's no reason not to celebrate Irishness. And I don't know, but is St. Patrick's Day celebrated among the Protestants of Northern Ireland? I don't know. But nonetheless, and I think it's going to be a quiet St. Patrick's Day here, so and I'm not going to go out and run around amongst the amateurs. My friends over at Maggie's are having a thing. But I don't have much green to wear. Honestly, I don't. So, probably stay, and the best I could do is some green lipstick and green eyeshadow. It's cute, but I don't know if that'll suffice. And this will be the last Friday on the Front Porch for the month of March. Well, no, maybe not, but let's just say that we will miss next week's Friday on the Front Porch. Let's put it that way. I will be leaving. I'll be leaving the 24th, a week from today, headed for New Jersey and then D.C. And then we will have a Friday on the Front Porch on the final day of March, the 31st. So it's not the last Friday on the Front Porch of March. So that just trying to get the schedule squared around. So
I will be gone the 24th, the 25th, the 26th. The 26th is the film festival in New Jersey, Princeton Environmental Film Festival. And then talking to some students on the 27th, leaving for D.C. on the 27th. It's not a very long drive from D.C. to, or from Princeton to D.C. Then the 28th and 29th, I will be working on the AIC Act in D.C., and I'll head home on the 30th. So that's what the schedule, and, you know, who knows, I may actually be on the air Thursday the 30th. Getting ahead of myself, though, because, well, we've got other things we do at the beginning of the program. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we say thank you to our 17th day of the month subscribers. That means thank you very kindly to Labor Man out in New Mexico. Thank you so kindly. And Labor Man, Gary, is our only subscriber for the 17th, so if you were ever thinking about subscribing to the Horn, this would be a great day to do it. Maybe consider that. Thanks so much to Amber out in Kansas. Thank you, Amber. Amber took what was a four-digit fundraising hole and turned it into a three-digit fundraising hole. So where we stand right now is $900. We've got $900 to go to finish the week. That's basically this program, the one last night, Thursday, and then Wednesday. And if we do that, we'll be good for the week. And then we've got four more. We've got the 4 days of next week, Monday through Thursday. Then gone, like I said, and home hopefully on Thursday, Thursday the 30th, and then probably on the front porch on the 31st. I'm crossing my fingers on that. I hope so. So all that having been said, a reminder. And thank you, gratitude, thank you to everybody who's liking and subscribing wherever you're listening to the podcast, Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spotify or Podbean itself. Thank you for liking and subscribing and leaving comments. And thank you as well if you're listening on TuneIn for hitting the little heart button for liking the, you know, the station, the player there on TuneIn. Thank you so, so much. Thank you so very much indeed. So it is Friday on the front porch, and that means here in about 45 minutes or so, we will go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table around which we gather every Friday to cuss and discuss and carry on and see what's on folks' minds at the end of the week. I've got several things in my stack. Well, thank you. It's always nice to be appreciated, Brother Deacon Asa. Somebody caught my Aaron Gabralis. It's just silliness, that's all. Like, you know, like the holiday itself. But there are things in the stack, serious and perhaps less so. You have to enjoy it anytime anybody takes dead aim at Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. And so kudos to Claudia Conway, the teenage daughter of George and George Conway and Kellyanne Conjob Conway, Skeletor Conway, the alternative facts lady. Claudia Conway took to Twitter and said, "Who's winning a fight? Winning in a fight?" And offered a choice between Rafaelito and the green M&M. The green M&M trounced Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, 98% to 2%. People are still roasting him, and I'm sure he doesn't know about it, and that's a pity. Somebody said, if Ted Cruz is one answer to that question, the other answer is always right. Another said, my money's on the green guy if Ted doesn't run away to Cancun. And then, because she was apparently having a little blast, Claudia Conway also put up a poll question between testicle-toasting Tuckio Rose Carlson versus Clifford the Big Red Dog. It wasn't quite the runaway between Tuckio Rose and Clifford the Big Red Dog. Clifford the Big Red Dog only beat Tuckio Rose Carlson 96% to 4%. Then there was Marginal Trailer Queen versus Harry Potter. Harry Potter was 96% to 4%. Good for you, Claudia, young lady. Hope you're having a wonderful time. Out in Arizona, Stan. The maggot princess Carrie Lake has declared herself the winner of the governor's election in Arizona last November. She's making that claim based on a new Rasmussen poll. And she's moaning that Rasmussen poll reveals the red wave did happen. No, it's just a little skid mark. According to the Rasmussen poll, and Rasmussen polls are notoriously slanted and tilted, 50% of Arizonans say the 2022 election issues were done intentionally to hurt Republicans.
What? Huh?
I'm sorry, but 50% is not a majority. Math is hard, right, Carrie Lake? And then the neo-maxi-zoom dweeby over at Gateway Pundit, the dumbest man on the internet, said, new Rasmussen poll reveals that Trump endorsed Carrie Lake, Abe Hamada, and Mark Fincham likely won the 2022 election. No, it doesn't. It says that there are a sufficient number of people who live in under bell jars in Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium in Arizona, Stan, who will say that despite the obvious and uncontrovertible facts. Because it's worth remembering, Katie Hobbs, the Democratic nominee, actually won by 17,000 votes at 50.3%. Carrie Lake, meanwhile, continues to throw money down a rat hole, a frivolous, bullshit, bogus challenge, which one hopes will... keep spending money, honey. Do please. Because, well, that's a beautiful way to spend any campaign cash that you might want to have on hand running for senator in 2024. Oh, and by the way, I need to note that in the big dance... Don't leave. This is relevant. In the big dance, of course, WVU fell to Maryland. Furman beat Virginia. And Arizona took it on the chin. So just about everybody's brackets are busted, especially with Virginia losing and Arizona losing. But on the other hand, Marquette moved on. And with Marquette moving on, Ralph said, as a result of that game, I'm offering a $50 challenge. The Marquette Moves On challenge is on the table, so that means if we can raise $50, Ralph's doubles it, and then, we'll be down to $800 to go to finish the week, and $100 funded for Wednesday's program. Thank you, Ralph's, and good on you and good on Marquette. Lee in New York sends me a picture of the famous Harry Truman photo of him holding up the Chicago Daily Tribune with the headline "Dewey defeats Truman." Lee noting polls are never wrong, you know, just like Dewey, right? And by the way, Rasmussen, which ran the poll, the 538 folks who do pollster ratings gave them a B. Wow, that was a mercy B, wasn't it? On a more serious note, a little bit of audio to get us started. An interesting exchange today over on MSNBC between the former Bush administration official, Nicole Wallace, and a former Department of Justice official namely Peter Strzok. And she brought up a question that has, well, bedeviled no small number of us. Namely, where are the indictments? Because there's a lot of breathlessness as law enforcement officials prepare for a potential Trump indictment any day now. Any day now.
Bear spray and everything else. That's the kind of thing that I don't understand how you, if you go to these 23% of the Republicans who are out there, or you know, whatever the number is, and say, hey, you know, let's lay down all these photographs from the hospital of these law enforcement officers. Is this something you support? Because I don't know how anybody with a straight face can say, oh, yeah, you know, actually, that's all right. Because it flies in the face of logic. And I think what we're seeing here is people who aren't thinking too deeply about what occurred, who are sitting there watching Tucker Carlson wheel out, you know, all these peaceful protesters by selectively picking 2 minutes out of hundreds and thousands of hours of coverage, and aren't challenging or being presented with the actual truth of what occurred.
Mary, I got a text in line of what Pete's saying from Harry Dunn today, who said this: tomorrow marks 800 days since January 6th. In no world should it take 800 days to determine if someone broke the law. Why are we at the 800-day mark without Harry Dunn's, I think, first public testimony was about finding the people who sent the hitman? Why are we at day 800 without any outward signs of Donald Trump or his closest lieutenants, people who were safe from the violence at the U.S. Capitol that day, being held to account?
Well, you know, these are things we've talked about over those 800 days, and I do think it makes sense the way the investigation started, where you charge and...
And by the way, this is Mary McCord. She's the former acting assistant attorney general for national security at the DOJ.
Indict and try and convict your most readily provable offenses, which were the people who physically attacked the Capitol, and then you work your way up from there. All indications are that is what is happening, and that's the investigation that Jack Smith has taken over. We certainly know from reporting that there have been a number of people very close to the former president who have been subpoenaed in recent weeks and months. It appears that some of those people are not cooperating because it has also been reported that Jack Smith has sought to appeal to the chief judge of the district court in D.C. for her help, and now it's actually a new chief judge, Judge Jeb Boasberg, for the judge to intervene where people are not cooperating. So I do think the Justice Department will feel some pressure to make decisions before we get too far into the 2024 elections. And so I think, you know, we're all kind of waiting to see what will happen. And it is unfortunate that it is taking so long. But I will say it's not unusual in a case of this nature. And I say a case of this nature, there's nothing of this nature that I ever experienced in my more than 23 years in the department. But a case of this magnitude, this big, it does take some time. The records are voluminous. The video and digital evidence is voluminous. And getting the right evidence, because if the department is going to indict a former president, they want it to be locked up solid. And getting the evidence to get them to that comfort level does take some time. But I can imagine.
You know, not to interrupt, but is that not exactly what I have said here on previous occasions? Yeah, you know, so far ahead of the curve, we're out on straight road. If you shoot at the king, you better by God hit. Not that Trump is a king, just that he wants to be.
Officer Dunn's, you know, disappointment and anxiety waiting for this. I also just want to mention, you know, given the questions you were just asking to Pete about the impact of this Republican viewpoint and this new committee to reinvestigate January 6th. I mean, this is all undermining to the ongoing existing investigations and prosecutions of nearly 1,000 people. I mean, is it essentially having elected members of Congress and Republicans saying while these prosecutions are going on that this was just peaceful protest? And I think that, you know, that is so damaging to the rule of law. The rule of law is, you know, a compact between the governed and the governed, that the law applies equally to everyone. And I know you're going to say, well, how about Trump? And that's fair. And we're talking about that. But you know, to be actively, you know, something that almost every one of them the day after January 6th came out denouncing what they saw. They didn't have any trouble then, you know, referring to it as exactly what it was, an insurrection, and to blaming Trump for it. And to change that narrative now and change it in the middle of all these prosecutions for what appears to be political purposes is really abandoning any notion of the rule of law in the United States, which is very undermining to democracy and to our national security.
Are you surprised?
Well, gosh, you know, what are we surprised about anymore? I mean, everything surprises me, but then I think, why am I surprised? And I guess, you know, I would expect more of our leaders. I would expect more of those who, the day after January 6th, said the truth, said what, you know, because it's so easy for us all to view it for ourselves. And even with the few snippets that Tucker Carlson found of some peaceful walking through Capitol at various points, I mean, there are thousands and thousands of hours of video that show something very different. Everyone experiencing it who had to flee for their lives knows what actually happened there that day. And so to me, the gall, the chutzpah to then just, you know, tell lies about what we can all see for our own, you know, with our own eyes and listen to with our own ears still surprises me.
You are both experts in counterterrorism as it applied to protecting the United States of America from foreign terrorists. Just explain how an assault on truth is instrumental in the process of radicalization and recruitment. How do you get someone to fly an airplane into the World Trade Center? What's the first step? Mary.
Yeah, so...
Nice. Granted, she's a loyal Bushy, but that was a good one. I like that a lot. Did you catch that? What she just did?
All the chutzpah to then just, you know, tell lies about what we can all see for our own, you know, with our own eyes and listen to with our own ears still surprises me.
You are both experts in counterterrorism as it applied to protecting the United States of America from foreign terrorists. Just explain how an assault on truth is instrumental in the process of radicalization and recruitment. How do you get someone to fly an airplane into the World Trade Center?
She's not quite to where we are here, but good for you, Nicole Wallace. Come on, hon. You can get there, because she just equated the terrorists who attacked the Capitol on January 6th with the hijackers who flew planes into buildings on September 11th, 2001, which is a more than apt and accurate comparison. By the way, Matt in San Francisco noting indictments. I'm still waiting for George W. Bush to be prosecuted. I'm nothing if not patient. Well, in this case, it's a virtue, Matt. It's a really, really, really long-lasting virtue. But insofar as a lot of people watch her who are in the know, inside the Beltway and whatnot, you know, this might even embolden, embolden, by the way, remember, is according to Boss Man Wayne, embolden is an old Serbian term meaning to give balls. I've always loved that since the first time he said it. That Nicole Wallace might embolden other people to start maybe doing what we've been doing all along and thinking about January 6, 2021 as the terrorist attack that it was. Please, Nicole, don't take it back.
It's a first step. Mary.
Yeah, so, you know, what we've seen, Pete and I, in our, you know, history of counterterrorism work is that oftentimes it is that radicalization based on false narratives, right? You know, for ISIS, it was a lot of false narratives about the West, about the United States, and things that they can draw people into believing by being more and more extreme in their content. And, of course, they take advantage of platforms like social media to actually help draw in people into that. But those false narratives and lies and propaganda drive real action, and we see it time and time again, and that's what's so worrisome about this. And it's not new even here. I mean, January 6 itself was the result of a false narrative that was not only promoted by the former president but was adopted by many, many others, including people in positions of power with a veneer of, you know, credibility, who used those platforms to spread disinformation, to spread lies, which led directly to people, you know, stepping out of that virtual space into the physical space. And some of them, I think, truly believing there'd been election fraud, some not knowing, but going along with it, and committed an insurrection. And, you know, it is not okay, it is not consistent with rule of law, when you don't like the result of something, to go physically, violently try to prevent the peaceful transition of power. Presidents, you know, change every 4 years. There's an opportunity to vote for whose policies you agree with, and you know we don't, under our rule of law, if you disagree, you don't try to violently prevent that transfer of power. And so I think it's very damaging that false narratives were created and continue to be created, which will cause people to take action in the real world.
And it's not a quiz. I mean, the false narrative was created by Donald Trump. It was echoed by Fox News. It was processed and heard by Trump supporters, and they attacked the Capitol. And I guess, you know, Neil Katyal asked me if I was frustrated. I'm not frustrated, and I don't think Harry Dunn has anxiety about the length of time. I think what is clear is that our Department of Justice isn't interested in getting at the root cause of this domestic violent extremist attack on the U.S. Capitol. There are no outward-facing signs that the Department of Justice's National Security Division, which you ran, Mary.
Wow. So Nicole Wallace is where Flavio and Joy in Ann Arbor and a number of us are. Merrick Garland may not have the stomach for this. That says something. We're not frustrated. We just don't think they've got the nerve, which is another way of saying interest.
Mary McCord has been investigating this, and I know it doesn't end in charges, so we wouldn't necessarily see that, but there's no outward signs that they viewed it that way. I remember Andy McCabe writing a book and coming out and saying, I opened a counterintelligence investigation to Trump. Don't know what happened to it. Pete, I know at one point I imagine you worked on it. So I know these aren't the sorts of things that resolve in any sort of public airing of what was discovered, but it is abundantly clear. Mary, you just outlined classic extremism, that no one at DOJ, in terms of a criminal investigation, has attacked Donald Trump's role in the insurrection in any way in the weeks, months, and years after the attack itself until Jack Smith arrived. Is that a fair assessment in terms of what's public-facing, Mary?
Well, I think there was investigation ongoing before Jack Smith was appointed to take it over.
Trump and his circle?
I think there was, because, you know, even though there might not have been a lot of outward manifestations, no, you know, spotting of different witnesses at the grand jury, there's a whole lot that you would do before you did anything that was overt, because you would want to make sure you had as much evidence as you could to confront the witnesses who might be hostile, who might be trying to protect the president. There are things also that the government can collect, you know, under court order without it being public. Now, I don't know how much was done. I find it impossible to believe that my foreign colleagues were not taking those steps. And I know that there would have been people both at the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C., where I spent 20 years, or the National Security Division, where I spent 3 years, who would have been pushing for that. I think it's been slow. I think the department's been careful not to say too much about it. But in some ways, Garland has said more about this than, you know, oftentimes the department says about ongoing investigations. And I think it will be incumbent upon him to give some conclusion, if there's charges, obviously there'll be announcements related to that.
Bear spray.
Yeah, okay. Mary McCord, sounds like, well, she has more faith in the process than I do, or you do. Or at least you, all of us, our community. And there is an inclination to say that, or to think that 800 days after the terrorist attack of January 6th, and where we are now, it's a lot to think that there's going to be an indictment of Nitwit Nero for his involvement in this, and that it can be resolved prior to the formal opening of the primary season in 2024. You know, and that's Iowa in January and then New Hampshire thereafter. And in conjunction with January 6th, there is some newly released video that shows right-wing octogenarian Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, who at the time, as President Pro Tem of the Senate, was third in line to the presidency, being escorted quickly away from the terrorists. Mediaite still refers to them as rioters. What's interesting about the video is that Grassley is mere feet away from none other than Jacob Chansley, the QAnon shaman, or as I have long referred to him, a refugee from a Ted Nugent cosplay convention. Politico had the video. Let's see if there's any Nat sound to be had. From the event. Politico noted that Grassley's caught on tape proximity to the pro-Trump rioters, again with the rioters, terrorists, adds new dissonance to testicle-toasting Tuckio Rose Carlson's on-air minimization of the siege. And the video was actually taken by one of the people attacking the Capitol. Mm-hmm. A Proud Boy is seen looking past the police officer at Grassley as he's beating a hasty retreat. The Proud Boy in question was Dominic Pizzola. And it gives the lie to what Tucky O'Rose asserted. Oh, and if you recall the story from earlier this week about the students at Stanford Law School who objected to being lectured by a Federalist Society goon who sits on the United States 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, Kyle Duncan, who went on to call those students dog shit. Well, we can see the effects of the Federalist Society on students. There was a gathering of young Federalist Society fascists in Texas, Stan. And where the youngins want to go is more than a little bit worrisome, although not surprising. Politico and Ian Ward reported on the National Student Symposium in Austin. They were, among other things, greeted by and addressed by Texas Governor Greg Aspott. And now the mask is off. These young, mostly law students, are done. They're done with the American experiment. Among other things, at this Federalist Society clavern in Austin, it became clear that these students are now interested in completely upending the constitutional order of things. They were addressed in a panel discussion by a professor of law emeritus at UCLA named Daniel Lowenstein. He said, democracy is what philosophers call an essentially contested concept, differences that seem on their surface to concern the meaning of the word democracy. And he said, what they really are is a struggle to advance particular and controversial political ideas. What democracy does not mean was plebiscitary democracy or simple rule by democratic majorities. What's odd about that statement is that it's actually somewhat in sync with Madison and Hamilton during the Constitutional Convention, because, and this is not a quote, but it's near enough, they said, we're going to say that we're doing democracy. And whatever it is that we do, we're going to call democracy. Because in their hearts, because they were not stupid people, they knew that they were not going to do democracy. But they knew that it would play well with the... Well, it would play well with the rubes. It's kind of hard to say you're doing democracy when right off the bat you say that the only people who can vote are white men who own property, and only property above a certain value, and that the value of that property can be determined by how many other human beings you have enslaved. And in point of fact, Professor Lowenstein cited the Federalist Papers, wherein you can see Madison and Hamilton engaging in that sort of political fraud. But what was more telling was what came later in the same panel. the Politico report says that later on the same panel, Joel Alisea, a law professor at where else, Catholic University of America, diagnosed the apparent threats facing American democracy today, political violence, abuses of governmental power, and attempted election subversion, to name a few, as symptoms of a deeper malaise. Naturally, Joel Alisea, a law professor at the Catholic University of America, couldn't simply offer up his remarks. I hate this. I freaking hate this. But he had to get a jab in at transgender rights. I'm sorry. I didn't do that. I didn't pull this story because of that. The story is about how Federalist Society students are no longer interested in the American experiment, and among other things, and makes sense because it was in Texas, Stan, they started barking and grunting and braying and bleating about, what else, secession. But Joel Alisea, law professor at the Catholic University of America, said,
at this point in our society, we can't even agree whether somebody is a man or a woman.
Really? Because we don't have much trouble on that, with that, on this side. It's the right wingers, it's the maggots, it's the theocratic fascists who want to run around looking up everybody's skirt or down their pants, regardless of how many other clues and cues one gives off.
Yeah, but don't you got a pecker?
No.
Well, what about your chromosomes?
Show me one, dipshit. Politico says Alisea advised the attendees to embrace conversion rather than coercion. Huh. What an interesting concept. What an interesting thing for a law professor from the Catholic University of America to say. And what an interesting story to have on St. Patrick's Day.
Conversion rather than coercion.
Wonder what he wants us to convert to, Joel Alisea from the Catholic University of America. There was a question and answer session afterward, at which point one member of the audience said, hey, what about a full-scale national divorce? Somebody's been paying attention to Marginal Trailer Queen. Because that's a favorite fetish object for Congresswoman Sporkfoot. This is stressful. I'm not gonna lie. This is fucking stressful. Now, to his credit, Joe Biden is trying to, for all he is worth, appoint more civil rights-oriented jurists. And he really is trying to, he's got the Senate to do it with, and he's trying to get them onto the bench. But the Federalist Society has a taste for secession. Burn some sense into them. Burn some sense into them, I say. I wonder if William Tecumseh Sherman actually has descendants alive in America today. Not saying, just saying. That's scary. Conversion went rather than coercion. That's, you can sign this here confession or you can hang from that there tree. It's, well, it's frightful. I know. Randy Radar says they won't do it, but of course, but I want all these authoritarians to stay out of my apartment, stay out of messing with my computer, and stay out of my non-sex life. Exactly. This is why we need big. Well, you know, we do need big government. We need government big enough not to be able to fit into the homes of Americans who just want to be left alone. Meanwhile, out in Colorado, there's a dude bro by the name of Dave Williams. And he's the brand spanking new chairman of the Colorado Republican Party. He's a maggot, in case you were wondering. He's an election denier. And the Denver Post had published an editorial on Wednesday, the title of which was Editorial with Dave Williams, Colorado's GOP Can Quit the Charade, saying the GOP staffers at the party's state headquarters in Greenwood Village should go ahead and take down the American and Colorado flags and run up the Trump and Q flags that they hid in the closet for 2022. Damn, that's just the beginning. This wasn't so much an editorial about the Colorado GOP as it was a crushing brief against it. The party is done pretending in this state to reject the extremists' lies that fueled an attack on the U.S. Capitol and caused a constitutional crisis. It's a shocking decision following an election where even their most anti-Trump candidates got trounced at the polls. Last week, Dave Williams, an election conspiracy theorist who maintains without evidence that the 2020 election was stolen, was regretfully nominated the head of the Colorado Republican Party. Williams certainly hasn't come a long way since his college days when he used his position of student body president to discriminate against an LGBT student group at the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. Hi, Lady B. Haven't heard from you in a while. You okay? And since being ousted from student council in 2007, what a resume, gold star that is, bounced off of student council in 2007. Williams is still the same old bigoted bully, only now with more power to wield than just refusing to sign off on the approximately $2,000 check to fund an LGBT student organization. I can hardly click on a link that has to do with politics in this country without finding some Republican barking and grunting and braying and bleeding about the LGBTQ community. And as badly as I would like to ignore it, I can't. Because this program is about current events and the political and social conflicts that take place in this country. What has Dave Williams done? Well, he's proposed several amendments to a House resolution supporting voting rights in 2022, thanking those who joined the Save America rally for Trump in 2020, then calling into question the legitimacy of President Joe Biden's election. The amendments also supported indicted Mesa County Clerk and Recorder Tina Peters, who he claimed now faces unjust prosecution and persecution. He also called for the state to end the use of Dominion voting systems. Sue him, y'all. You're into suing people. Go for it, Dominion. Sue him. And noting that Dominion Voting Systems is actually a Colorado company. The Denver Post editorial board said, we aren't sure exactly what was going through the heads of the approximately 200 Republican Party leaders who voted for Williams. Well, Denver Post, y'all, nothing. Nothing was going through their heads. Their heads are empty. Well, no, they're not empty. They're just filled with the thin gray settlings of slop that pass for human brains among Republicans almost all over the country. Okay, all over the country. We thought that conservative El Paso County sent a pretty clear message about Williams's divisive brand of politics, often divorced from reality, when only 33% of voters in Congressional District 5 supported Williams. And they go on to note that he's doubling down. Williams styled himself as a wartime leader at the convention in Loveland, where he was elected, talking about a war within America. If we were to employ such outlandish rhetoric, we would say there is a war, but is an anti-corruption war for honesty, equality, and freedom, with Trump on one side and most Americans on the other. Williams stands on the wrong side of history. Well, apparently somebody let Dave Williams read that editorial. Because now he's gone sweat condition alpha on the Denver Post.
The Denver Post is nothing more than an extension of the corrupt Democrat Party that's exempt from campaign finance law. They are clearly lapdogs for radical Democrats and provide political cover for them. The Colo GOP, which looks like colon GOP, won't waste time with these phonies anymore.
I don't think there's anybody losing sleep at the Denver Post, at least not about Dave Williams, or at least not about Dave Williams' words. Of course, he's a Republican. It's Colorado. And God forbid, before I even say it, you never know when Dave Williams will stoke up some stochastic terrorism and, you get the idea. But the Denver Post does worry. Because, in fact, as influential as the paper is, the Denver Post has largely been gutted back in 2018, Alden Global Capital, a hedge fund, bought the Denver Post and then gutted it. Margaret Sullivan, writing at the Washington Post in 2018, said the newsroom would be below 70 positions, a startling drop from a time not much more than a decade ago when the Post and its rival, the Rocky Mountain News, together had more than 600 journalists. The papers were in a joint operating agreement until the Rocky went out of business in 2009. Margaret Sullivan called Alden Global Capital corporate strip miners. Woof. This is just... It's only 2023. We're not even... like I said earlier, we're not even at the primary phase of the 24 campaign. Theo with a note saying, inviting prurient interest as a political ploy. There's a certain lewd quality to the right-wing nut job's incessant fascination with minority sexual rights, and a deliberately intrusive one. You're not wrong to call them out. Absolutely not wrong. I know. But I do field complaints about, why are you going to talk about that all the time? And it hurts. Because the only reason I'm getting that is because I'm part of that marginalized community now, Theo. I talked about these issues a lot long ago when I was still, Bob. You know, during the North Carolina potty wars of, 2017, 2016, I was on the right side of that story, too. And believe you me, and this is not me pogo sticking up onto the cross, this shit's hard. I talk with other people who deal, you know, for whom these attacks pose an existential threat. And they are largely people, and I don't think I'm crossing any lines by saying that people who finally find their freedom, whether it's a matter of being gay and coming out of the closet and celebrating and living your own life, or whether it's being trans and finally expressing the gender that you have known you or for however many years, whether it's a kid or, you know, a 60-year-old lady, is glorious. And sometimes I feel like, you know, this entire stinking thing is entirely a matter of these grim, gray, hate-filled, miserable, shit-eating right-wingers not being able to tolerate anyone else being happy. If they're miserable, everybody else has to be miserable too. It is so bad that in Kentucky, Stan, where they just followed where Tennessee had made the path, they have passed new legislation that bans gender-affirming care for trans kids and, once again, restricts drag shows. And basically, Kentucky Stan was trying to one-up Tennessee Stan. And there's something that happens sometimes. A Republican will leave politics for some other field of endeavor and suddenly find their voice and their conscience. So in Kentucky Stan, there's a guy named Bob Helleringer. And he used to be a member of the Kentucky State House and a Republican. I mean, I presume he's still a Republican. The copy's a little ambiguous. A former Republican state representative from Kentucky. I presume he's still a Republican. He's just not a state representative anymore. Over at the Louisville Courier-Journal, Bob Helleringer unloaded. Yeah, he's still a Republican because the headline reads, "I'm a Kentucky Republican calling out my party's war against LGBTQ people. I wish I could blame both political parties for this cataclysm, but I cannot." And being Kentucky, there has to be a basketball reference, and that's how the op-ed begins. "Right now, it's a close call whether the University of Louisville men's basketball team or Kentucky's LGBTQ community has had the worst year. At least the woeful Cards won 4 games. The LGBTQ folks are still winless on the season." What season? That would be the one in Frankfort, Kentucky, where the Kentucky General Assembly is meeting and considering a tsunami of bills that attack people, including defenseless children who happen to be homosexual or transgender, designations that are nobody's public business. Helleringer continued and said, "I lobby for the Fairness Campaign, the advocacy group that is attempting to contain the carnage. We might as well try to turn back the sea. Every week our team has triage meetings to decide which anti-gay measure is worse than another in order to schedule appearances to offer testimony in opposition. I wish I could blame both political parties for this cataclysm, but I cannot. Every anti-gay trans bill this session was introduced by a Republican, but there's hope. GOP State Representatives Kim Bonta, Stephanie Dietz, Kim Moser, Killian Timoney, and Senator Stephen Meredith have voted this session against making LGBTQ Kentuckians second-class citizens. The sad fact is, though, they aren't nearly enough. Transgender children are the primary targets of the vendetta. What pronouns can be used to describe them in our public schools? I am not making this up. What medical care they can obtain, what psychological services they can have, what bathrooms the kids can use in public school, among other degradations. Gay adults have been singled out for special humiliation by having to contend with a bill that addresses one of the Commonwealth's most critical problems. Who can attend drag queen shows and when, where they can be performed? An artistic expression, dance, that threatens absolutely no one. But he brought the receipts, Bob Helleringer did. Apart from the ironically named Family Foundation, not a single school superintendent, no medical professional, no parents, no one from a chapter of the Kiwanis, Rotary, FOP Lodge, VFW Post, the Knights of Columbus, Ducks Unlimited, or the Ancient Order of Hibernians, nice reference for St. Patrick's Day there, has testified at any committee meeting to advocate for anti-gay trans bills. Nobody. Scores of people representing professional and religious organizations or simply themselves testify against these pernicious measures, but the bills still come flying out of committee like a field of horses sprung from the starting gate. And he hits all the high points. You know, this is a contradictory look for pro-life Republican legislators who believe that all human life, born or pre-born, is sacred. One cannot simultaneously defend innocent life and demean the lives of our equally innocent gay sisters and brothers as nothing more than printed names on a birth certificate. Oh, he even used the same Abraham Lincoln quote that I used when I was berating the House of Delegates a couple of weeks ago. As one of the co-founders of the Republican Party, Abraham Lincoln said, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." He goes on to call out the silence of Moscow Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. He points out that Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, brays and bleats about freedom and liberty
and keeping government out of our lives,
but then says absolutely nothing about this monstrous infringement upon people's rights. I'm not kidding. It's tiresome. It really, really is. Bunch more stories in the stack. Good God, they're erasing. This is a mind blower. Down in Florida, Stan, a publisher, in order to appease the dictator of Florida, has erased, I kid you not, has erased racism from the story of Rosa Parks. No joke. According to the New York Times, who reviewed changes that a publisher called Studies Weekly made to the course materials and destined for Florida, the Times says that they erased references to racism in books that mentioned the story of Rosa Parks. In the Rosa Parks lesson now from Studies Weekly that first graders get, the current version says African Americans had to give up their seats on the bus if a white person wanted to sit down. But that's been revised. Parks was told to move to a different seat and she wouldn't do it. Well, this is right up there with that Texas textbook of a few years ago that said that Africans coming to the United States were looking for work. Florida said, no, we didn't make them do that. But the publisher said, we had to make the changes in order to comply with the Stop Woke Act. Good God. My ongoing battle not to have a bottle of rot gut tequila in this studio is, well, it's a struggle. So, for the moment now, let's run over to the old holler tree where we gather around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and see what Sparky's got going on. Hey, Sparky.
Late lunch. That's what I got going on.
What's for lunch?
Soup and crackers.
Works for me. I eat a lot of soup. Good stuff.
I'm in the house for a few minutes.
That's okay. Is it raining or snowing or?
No, it's a beautiful day.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. I never know anymore with California and the atmospheric rivers. It might be rivers of blood or frogs and locusts. Hard to say.
Well, the other day they said it was going to rain today, but no, just cloudy.
Oh, well, we got yours because it's been pouring outside all day long.
And it's 68 degrees, or the predicted high was 68 degrees, but it feels warmer.
Well, here in almost level west by Coal Manchinistan, we've got a sloppy 48.
Well, I've already been through all that sloppy stuff.
Yeah, this must be...
Everything's pretty much dried up. This is the third day we've had no rain.
And oddly enough, it used to be, this is the 46th day without rain.
Yeah. We've had our share of it. You ought to see the snow on the mountains, though. It sure is beautiful.
Oh, I bet it is. I saw some video footage of reservoirs in California that appear to be filling up more than they have in recent years, and that's got to be a little bit of a relief.
Yeah, well, the Sacramento River was flooding here downstream from us. A place called Tehama usually always floods down there for some reason.
So,
in Monterey County got the worst of it. I don't know if you've seen the videos of that.
I saw some. It looks ugly as hell.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we haven't had too many good days, but we had just enough so I could get my well drilled.
Well, that's what matters. You dried out enough to get the well drilled, and you got nice, clear, clean, pristine, pure water now, right?
Almost. Still got a little bit of a rusty color to it. But I don't drink it anyway.
Yeah, you bring in bottled stuff?
I get it delivered.
Wow, yeah.
5-gallon jugs. Best water on earth, Mount Shasta spring water.
That just sounds delightful.
It is. It makes the nicest ice cubes.
A good ice cube is an underappreciated nicety.
Mm-hmm. You agree with Jeremy said?
You there, Jeremy?
Yeah.
Did me shit about saying crackers.
Oh yeah, I saw. Yeah, you better be glad you're not in Florida. Ron DeSantis heard you say cracker. You'd be in jail.
That's right. Be careful you're bragging about your water. Pretty soon, if the wrong person hears this program tonight, the California elitist brags about perfectly clear water for ice cubes. It's gonna happen.
But having mentioned Ron Monkey up DeKlantis, we have a little victory. A federal court in Florida has rejected the Florida state government, one of the governors, the AG's, attempt to block an injunction of the Stop Woke Act. And that's kind of wild because it was a three-judge panel of the 11th United States Circuit Court of Appeals. Which is, you know, next to the 5th United States Circuit Court of Appeals. Well, those are the two most wild-eyed right-wing cesspits in the United States Circuit Court of Appeals system. But three judges from the 11th Circuit told DeSantis and I guess his pet attorney general to go and pound sand and said that it cannot be used in higher education institutions. So that's a victory for the time being. But again, it only applies to institutions of, you know, higher learning. Brian Griffin, who is a press creep for DeSantis, said,
"The court did not rule on the merits of our appeal. The appeal is ongoing, and we remain confident that the law is constitutional."
So eventually the case will be tried in district court. I don't know if they're going to take the injunction up to the Supreme Court. But at least for now, at the University of Florida, Florida State University, University of Miami, Central Florida, Florida Central, Western Florida, Southwest by Northeast Florida University, etc., they can still actually teach about racism and sexism. But the sad thing is, it's going to come as a real shock to kids who are in the first grade right now learning that Rosa Parks was told to move to another seat and didn't. It's going to be a real mind blower when and if they get to college and find out why. But U.S. District Court Judge Mark Walker, back in 22 November, in excoriating the Stop Woke Act with regard to college-level instruction, said, "It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13, and the powers in charge of Florida's public university system have declared the state has unfettered authority to muzzle its professors in the name of freedom. Defendants argue that under this act, professors enjoy academic freedom so long as they express only those viewpoints of which the state approves. This is positively dystopian." Back in August, Judge Walker had also said, no, this will not apply to businesses in Florida. So basically, Ron Monkey up DeSantis for all of his fascist leanings and the fact that he eats like an animal that has never seen food before, according to one of his other staffers, former staffers. Basically, he's just running up legal bills that will not be compensated or paid by the other side. It's funny how Republicans do these things. You think about where else that money could have been, you know, used. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, we are 20 minutes into the second hour of the program. There's a $50 Marquette Moves On challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralph's. And an hour and 20 minutes into the program, that challenge goes untouched. We have $900 to go to finish fundraising on a, in a march that has, we're three shows behind. Then we got four shows next week, and hopefully one or two at the end of the week after that, depending on when I get home from D.C. So it would be awfully nice if Ralph's challenge could be met, and maybe we could move on from there and see a little bit more, a lot more activity. Very nice indeed. I saw Kevin in Colorado Springs pop in. Are you there, Kevin?
Yep, I'm here.
How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. First time I've joined in quite a while. You know, my mother and my father passed away this past fall, September and November. And then I had to put my cat down at the beginning of February. So it's been a challenging few months.
I can imagine. I'm hoping that as hard as all of this is to deal with, that you're managing as best as can be hoped.
I am. I'm hanging in there, doing a little better than hanging in there, I think, but hanging in there and just pushing forward, I guess, is the best way to say it.
I understand.
So it's nice to be able to join again. I've listened to most of the front porches. Just honestly enjoy listening, and so I thought I'd join today.
I'm glad you did.
I do want to say one thing, Robin.
Yes.
And I know you've made the point before, but listening to your this top of the show, these attacks on trans and gay will eventually affect all of us, no matter who we are, no matter what race, sex, religion we are. It will affect anyone that's not MAGA. And the sooner the Democratic Party realizes that, and I think a lot of them do, but I sure wish that more members of the Democratic Party would begin to speak out on some of these issues in a more vocal and forceful manner.
You know, Kevin, based on my own personal experience, I guarantee every American, including most kids, know at least 3 trans people in their lives and don't know it. And I probably know 4 or 5 gay people and don't know it because of what's going on right now. I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah. I don't disagree with it, just thinking about my own life and the people I've known in it. And it saddens me because I've always adopted the view that everyone is equal to me in the sense that nobody, because of their gender, race, religion, sexual orientation, is less than me. And I could care less, and I don't mean that badly, but I could care less what anybody chooses to live their authentic life with, how they choose to do it. That's their business and not mine. And certainly not how they choose to go to the bathroom or how they choose to dress or whatever. And being blind, it makes it even more visible to me, is a poor way of saying it. But I can't see. So if people would adopt that, I can't see what you look like or what anybody looks like or how they dress or anything else. I have to take each person based on what they say to me, how they say it to me, etc. I can't judge them on their looks. And I just wish more people would choose to do that instead of focusing on these silly, silly issues of what a person's sexual orientation or race is.
It was never about water fountains. It was never about bathrooms.
Exactly. It was not. It was. Yeah, it was never about schools. It's about the hate. Yeah, Randy Radar just sent me a note and said, they'll be going after the asexuals next because they're the next most marginalized group. Oh, no, they're already busy on that. LGBTQIA+, et cetera. Right. The A is in there for a reason. They hate everybody who is not white, male, cisgender, straight, and Christian. If you don't check off all five boxes on that, the Republican Party of the United States hates your goddamn guts.
Not to argue with you, Robin, but I've come to the conclusion that ever since the 1920s, greed took over and caused the Depression. And FDR put things together that lasted up through the 80s that kind of put a damper on that greed. And since Ronnie started his trickle-down economics and all the rest of that bullshit, the greed, and not only Republicans, but there are some Democrats in there too, but all of these woke, CRT, all the rest of these things, yeah, the Republicans hate the LGBTQIA community and all the rest of that. But if they can get the majority of the people of this country to be arguing about petty shit like that, and they can keep stirring the pot, people are too goddamn busy to see that they got a vacuum cleaner in your pocket and they're sucking out all the money. And I have come to the conclusion that the true only purpose, or the primary purpose, of a government should be to control the greed of the greedy. And back when the top tax rate was in the 90% bracket, that was a way to control the greed of the corporate class. And I had an aunt and uncle that were clearly in the 1% category. When she died about 1965, well, the husband's worth about $750,000, and the wife was worth about $7.5 million. And they had no problem at all paying the taxes because they still lived very high on the hog. And when I met up with people like Mrs. Parrott Crocker and some of the Stanford clan, they were all really nice people. They were all wealthy, but they weren't making 350 times the floor worker. They were making 20, 30 times the floor worker. And they didn't want to hoard money because they simply had to give it away as taxes. So let's say they were in the 90% tax bracket. If that CEO class gave the workers a $1 an hour raise, it truly only cost the people at the top 10 cents because the other 90 cents was paid by the federal government in not paying taxes. Today, with the maximum tax rate at 15% on capital gains type stuff, if they give a $1 an hour raise to a worker, it costs the people at the top 85 cents. And they don't want to spend that 85 cents. They want to keep it in their pocket. And the problem is that we have created in this country, and the maggots have fallen for it, hook, line, and sinker, that greed is good. And that everything the Republicans try to do is to shield the greed of the very upper 1% or 10%. I've got a brother-in-law who's in that 1% class, and he is just a diehard Trumpansy Republican, and by God, it's his money, and he should be able to keep it all. And he was an engineer, and they did most of the projects they did were public works-type projects. And so he became a 1% making money off of public works projects.
The ones who sup most richly at the public teat are always the ones who squeal most loudly, Roger.
Oh yeah, yeah. And this is we don't even go visit him anymore. I'm going to see him in June when I'm in New York for a wedding. But it's just. But I really honestly believe that government should be interested in eliminating the greed. I came across who's the guy? Peter Thiel, I think, is the one that started PayPal.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't remember, and I don't have it up in front of me. It'd be hard to find it. But when Silicon Valley Bank went down, I think he had $500 million in Silicon Valley Bank. Now, I
hope we're not backstopping that shit.
Oh, we are. We are. Because the Biden said all the depositors are going to be made whole, no matter how much money they had in there. Now, I have a problem with somebody accumulating $500 million in cash. Now, I can see if I start a logging company, for instance, the largest landowner in California, I think in the nation, is Red Emerson, who owns the Sierra Pacific Industries. And he is considered an incredibly wealthy man. But virtually all of his money, other than what he has to pay in payrolls for the sawmills and that kind of shit, is tied up in assets. I mean, he's bought the land, logs it, replants it, hangs on to it, waits 40 years, and logs it again. So, yeah, he's got an incredible amount of land wealth. Now, I'm not saying he's poor. I mean, he does have his own private plane and things like that. But I just cannot imagine having $500 million deposited in a bank. There is something wrong with our system if we allow the kind of greed. I don't know. What does PayPal take? 1%, 10%, 5% on a transaction? Or is it just
three.
A certain amount?
3.
Okay, 3%. And he's accumulated $500 million at the 3%. Why isn't somebody telling him, look, you're going to give 90% of that $500 million to the federal government so that we can do something to help build the roads that are delivering all the Amazon packages? But you're not going to get to keep that. Or, you know, hey, you got another option. You could drop it down to 1% and do, in essence, like the Carnegie folk did in building libraries all over the country. I don't see that kind of philanthropy coming right now from the very wealthy. They're hoarders. And we need to somehow stop the hoarding. But as long as we're sitting around bitching about DeSantis and Greg Abbott and this judge in Texas that's wanting to eliminate a perfectly safe drug, that the abortion action with these drugs is actually safer than carrying the baby to term. The drug, the abortion pill, is something like a 0.4% fatality rate, and carrying a baby to term is like 4%. So, you know, it's 10 times safer to do the abortion than it is to carry to term. And for the colored folk and the Native Americans, it's much higher. But as long as we're tied up in arguing about mesopriftone, or however you say it, we're not talking about Peter Thiel getting bailed out for $500 million in the goddamn bank. And if he lost that $500 million, I don't think it'd make a hell of a lot of difference to his lifestyle. I just really don't see it, because if he's got that kind of cash to put in the bank, he's already taking care of everything for his lifestyle.
Well, we do have a minor correction, you know, at least for the Peter Thiels of the world. Brother Deacon Asa lets us know with a link. Billionaire Peter Thiel claims he has $50 million of his own money in Silicon Valley Bank, not $500 million. So
I stand corrected. Sorry, Asa. Yeah,
that's okay. But there's more, you know, there's more to it than that. In as much as, well, yeah, and Jeremy, you're right. PayPal only takes the money if you don't check friends and family. If you use sending money to friends and family, then they don't take any fees out. but you have to go directly to PayPal from your PayPal to my PayPal in order to get that option. But that's how you get around a 3%. That all having been said, as they say up among our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties, I concur in part and I dissent in part. We'll deal with the dissent part first. Roger, you described these culture war issues as petty. I assure you that for people who live with these issues, it is not petty at all. It is existential. And by that, I mean, they're not kidding. This is not pure performative political theater. They desire to enact these laws. And these laws are sufficient to have people in places like Texas stand, Kentucky stand, Tennessee stand, Florida stand, Alabama, Mississippi stand, West Virginia stand, absolutely beside ourselves, wondering what we will have to do to remain alive. In particular, you know, the bill that would have made me have to start putting plans together to flee this state died in committee. It just didn't quite have the mojo, but it'll be back next year. On the other hand, the bills have already passed in Kentucky and Tennessee, Texas, Arkansas. There's more on the way in Alabama. And I don't think I'm talking out of school when I say that I have a dear friend who just got done painting her house, doing all and sprucing up her home in anticipation of trying to maximize the value of it if she has to sell it and flee for her very life. That's not petty, Roger.
I apologize for using the term petty, but and it is very, very important. But the amount of, how to word this, the amount of bandwidth that's being taken up.
Yeah, the energy, sure.
Is consuming. I mean, it's a very valid, fuck you, you know, take those bills and shove them where the sun don't shine. You know, I'm not denying that. But as long as all the oxygen is taken out of the room over abortion and transgender and drag story hour, I mean, my God, in Florida now, a school drama department cannot present a Shakespeare play as it was written.
No. You mean present it the way that it was presented in Shakespeare's time?
Correct.
With boys playing the girls' roles?
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, that
applies to, like, Julius Caesar or, well, I mean, not a lot of girls in Julius Caesar, but that applies to Romeo and Juliet, certainly. But there's another Shakespeare play, Midsummer Night's Dream, that has cross-dressing within it. A guy who is desperately, basically the people who wrote Tootsie stole the plot line of Midsummer Night's Dream and turned it into a big splashy Hollywood comedy. But it requires a male actor to dress as a female character. That definitely could not be performed in Florida or Tennessee or Kentucky. And we're talking about three states where Shakespeare would be really helpful.
My father was of the class of 1929 at Princeton. He never graduated because he flunked out. But when he was first there, he was a member of the drama club. And in the annual, there is a picture of the cast. I forget which Shakespeare play it was. But it was all drag. Not all. I mean, there were males, but all the female roles were drag. And it was just the way it was presented, because that's the way it was written. And on top of that, Princeton was 100% male.
Yeah. And one wonders, and that leads me to another topic. Wellesley College. Stephen New York made me aware of this, and I've been thinking about it for a while. Wellesley College has been admitting, you know, it's an all-women school. They've been admitting trans women since like 2016 or so, which is more than appropriate. They have lately decided they're going to admit non-binary individuals. Okay. But here's the part that I kind of went, what? Wellesley is an all-women's college, and they are now going to admit trans men. Now, this is not me gooning on trans guys, okay? But that seems like if you're going to admit trans men but not cis men, that means you're saying that trans men aren't men. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But they're going to do that, and it's causing a bit of an uproar inside the community. And
has Marjorie Three Toes found out about it yet?
Marjorie Sporkfoot? No, I don't think she knows A, that Wellesley College even exists, or B, if she does, where the fuck it is. But then again, most of this entire world she couldn't find. With a globe, a GPS, and a pack of bloodthirsty prison bloodhounds. But to get back to your original thesis, we kind of have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time, and we can. You know, I think in your analysis there, you were not saying that we can't. It's the mass. It's the generalized mass of struggling America that can't, because they're being worked half to death for shit wages.
But it's also the MAGA crowd.
Oh well, I mean they're
that they are so sucked off into these issues that they don't have time to understand anything. I mean, every night, faux news spins them out all over again. I mean, last night was the $73 million that Santa Clara Valley Bank or Silicon Valley Bank gave to Black Lives Matter. And every single one of those hosts talked about the $73 million that Silicon Valley Bank gave to the BLM movement. And the BLM movement never got $73 million. It's no way, no how. Didn't even happen. There were donations to historically black colleges of a couple of million. And there were some other historically black and LGBT organizations that got some donations, but it wasn't even close to $73 million. It was more like $4 or $5 million spread out amongst all of them. And BLM was not even one of them. But these jerks on faux news over and over and over again said $73 million. So
to the Black Lives Matter
hats get all – yeah, Black Lives Matter – and so all these MAGAs get all worked up. Well, that's what caused the bank to fail. Not that they were risking loans and not that they got caught in the credit squeeze created by the Federal Reserve, that the bank had bought long-term bonds, like 10-year and 30-year bonds, when the interest rates were 1% and 2%. And then when the Fed started jacking up the interest rate, the value of the bonds went down. And when they went to sell the bond, they couldn't recoup their original investment, which shorted them to be making the payouts. But those payouts were also a coordinated number via tweet to a whole bunch of the rather large the companies that had their payroll in Silicon Valley Bank. They got – there was a Twitter chain of, hey, man, this is a problem. You better get your money out. And so a whole bunch of these companies – I don't know which ones, but there's all kinds of startups down there. And so they went down and they pulled out their money to put it into some other bank so they could make their payroll. And that's that Twitter number that came down to where they pulled all their money out, which crashed the bank. So there's a insider trading kind of issue that I don't know if anybody's looking into it. And then the one on the East Coast, they got crowded because they were so sucked up into the cryptocurrency. That's what killed them.
Oh, and the company that owns the holding company behind Silicon Valley Bank, they just filed for bankruptcy protection today.
Filed for bankruptcy. Now, the one thing that Biden did do and the Fed did do is they said they were going to make the depositors whole, but not the investors. In the 2008, they made the investors whole as well. And so the executives walked away making
hopefully they take a haircut.
Yeah, and with the Silicon Valley Bank, they went down, I believe, on a Wednesday. I think that was the day that they actually went kaput. But like Monday or Tuesday or something like that, all the board of directors got their annual bonuses, and the CEO got like a $3.6 million payout. And 2 days later, they crashed the bank. Well, where's the guy with the silver bracelet saying, hey, come with me. Give that money back. You were doing insider trading. You knew the bank was in trouble, and you sucked the money out before it went down. That's got to be insider trading.
It smells like it, doesn't it?
What was it? Martha Stewart spent like 5 months in jail for a $50,000 number, and these guys are sucking out millions?
Oh, yeah. And I would be remiss if I did not mention along. Okay, first of all, thank you to Darlene. Darlene got us off the schneid. Darlene has met half of Ralph's Marquette Moves On Challenge. It would be great if somebody could meet the other half of that so that we will at least be down from $900 to $800, please. And I know it's hard when we have a little community made miracle a couple of days before. It's just hard to have the miracles to keep up with the miracles. But thank you, Darlene. Thank you so very much. And hopefully somebody will jump in alongside of you and help out in that sense. I loathe this and I despise it, the constant need to fundraise. But again, no buy gold now ads, and I don't think I'd be doing this if I had to run buy gold now ads. But I would be remiss, Roger, if I did not also make mention of what's going on in France.
Oh, yeah.
I'm proud of them. I am. We were up early for various reasons this morning, so I caught almost the entire program of my filthy morning habit, as my dear friend Tara Devlin of Tara Buster puts it. We hate watch Morning Joe. And, here and there, Joe has been kind of rehabilitating. But whenever Mika's not on the set, he backslides, as we like to refer to it in the Baptist church. He backslides. And he was backsliding today. Mika was nowhere to be seen, and his inner conservative came out as he began braying and bleating and barking about those goddamned ungrateful French who are setting fire to shit in the streets because Emmanuel Macron used his presidential powers to override and raise the Social Security retirement age, basically, I mean, you know, the retirement age, our equivalent of Social Security, to 64 years old. And Joe Scar was beside himself. How dare those French want the dignified retirement that they have been promised? And it's like, Joe, read the room. Yeah, maybe he was giggling because he knows that his generation, you know, he and I are the same generation, and we don't get to retire for Social Security purposes until 67, unless we want to retire for something like $3.16 a month. But the French continue to inspire because they will not put up with this shit. They will take to the streets. They will shut the economy down, and I hope they do. Because
Macron just kind of did a dictatorial number on that.
Yes, he did. It was by presidential fiat. And I'm not talking about the shitty little Italian car. Oh, I'll get emails for that. Fiats are great. But I respect the French for remaining organized enough that when the teachers go on strike, the bus drivers go on strike, and the bus drivers go on strike, the firefighters go on strike, and the firefighters go on strike, and the garbage workers go on strike, and the garbage workers go on strike, and the airplane pilots go on strike, lather, rinse, repeat. It's the only way to keep so-called representative government from being captured by the oligarchs. But, you know, the big difference between, say, Joe Scar and me is the fact that he's a multi-freaking millionaire for getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and being in the makeup chair by 5 and on the air by 6. And whereas, you know, I'm out here begging for $25. Instead of excoriating people for wanting a dignified old age, why not ask the question, because he said, you know, they're going to bankrupt the French economy. No, they're not. This was an oligarchic money grab. Because that's who Emmanuel Macron is. Though the fact that he came to power during Nitwit Nero's reign kind of made us sympathetic to him, insofar as he was young and handsome, has a lovely wife, and he was such a contrast as compared to Nitwit Nero, especially when Nitwit Nero went over there. But the fact of the matter is, he's a goddamned oligarch, okay? And the French economy is not in the toilet. And making people work. Was the retirement age 60? I don't know off the top of my head.
62.
Okay. So from 62 to 64, Squeaky? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, well, good. Raise hell. Because these things always have real world consequences. There are 62-year-old Frenchmen who will not make it to 64. I don't know how large the number is, but they will be victims of this decision. And it's a demonstration of solidarity that the rest of the world needs, and the United States particularly needs to see. In the energy sector, strikers are halting production at a huge refinery either this weekend or on Monday. There's been fuel delivery slowdowns. And again, Macron used a piece of constitutional power that is extremely controversial. And good for the French. There is the obligatory paragraph in the story I'm looking at saying several stores were looted during protests in Marseille. Clashes between demonstrators and security forces in western cities of Nantes and Rennes, as well as Lyon in the southeast. An AFP, Agence France-Presse, photographer Friday morning saw damage, including a burnt-out public bicycle, shattered shop window, and scorched car in Paris. And this is a case of the government simply not listening to the people. And I damned well hope they start. Thank you. Thank you, Mary Bell. Mary Bell says, I care. Thank you for caring, Mary Bell. So, Ralph's challenge is met. We are down from 900 to 800. Thank you so much. Oh, and by the way, happy birthday to Megan. Megan's been through the ringer. I mentioned yesterday that, well, day before yesterday, I mentioned that she slipped and fell down icy stairs, thought she'd fractured a wrist and an ankle. Hopefully it's not that bad. Hopefully it's just an ugly sprain, but sprains suck. And today is Megan's birthday, and she was planning on going somewhere to celebrate it. So, Megan, I hope you managed to try to have some joy out of your birthday one way or the other.
Scott has something to say.
Oh, Scott with us? Hey, Scott.
Hey, Robin, how are you?
I'm good. I hope you're feeling better.
Marginally. Pardon me, I'm getting there. Just drank something carbonated and it's coming back on me.
I understand.
I don't know. I mean, I'm a little late to the show, so maybe I missed a fuller opportunity for context. But I'm kind of at the point where the French are going to have to stand in line in terms of my attention. I'm not disconcerned. I'm not unconcerned. But right now, I'm juggling enough shit on my end as it is. Does that make me less of a world citizen?
No, I don't think so. But I think it's valuable to note things like what's going on in France, just as a matter of providing context to what we can't or won't do here. Now, I mean, some people in this country are willing to raise hell. It's just that they're the wrong people. There's a story today about a J6 terrorist by the name of Larry Brock, and in his prosecution, prosecutors have released information that shows that Larry Brock created a written plan to overthrow the government of the United States on Christmas Eve. He created the plan Christmas Eve, 2 weeks before the January 6th terrorist attack. In his plan, he noted key tasks, one of which was, quote, seize all Democratic politicians and Biden key staff and select Republicans, Thune and McConnell. And then, because he was a veteran of the United States Armed Forces, he said, we will begin interrogations using measures we used on Al-Qaeda to gain evidence on the coup. Because according to the terrorists, the coup was perpetrated by Joe Biden. He said, other maggots needed to seize national media assets and key personnel, and then, and this is a key word, eliminate them. That doesn't mean taking CNN off the air. That means murdering CNN journalists.
So what is the progress report on his plan?
Well, a little bit more. He wanted to let the Democratic cities burn, cut off power to food to all who oppose us. And then he anticipated...
Where is this guy based?
He's, you mean, where is he from?
I know. What is his operating sphere of influence?
He's a J6 terrorist. He was in the attack on the Capitol. He's been convicted of one felony and five misdemeanors. Even though he was calling for outright bloody murder. Established provisional government in rebellious states and representatives we can count on. Cease all foreign aid except for key allies as determined by Trump. General pardon for all crimes up to and including murder of those restoring the Constitution and putting down the democratic insurrection.
We'll have the copies of the new operating handbook for this guy's way of thinking been printed and distributed.
Yeah, you can find it on Twitter. But
you know, what I mean is, are these people in any way, shape, or form in power anywhere other than the space, the otherwise empty space between their heads?
No, they just wanted to overthrow the government of the United States and commit murder and mayhem.
Well, there are a lot of stupid people with dangerous ideas and maybe even plans afoot that want all manner of shit. But what is the likelihood of them, I won't even attach the word succeeding to it, because you know that eyes are upon them, and you know that their room to maneuver in is nowhere near where it was prior to the events of January 6th. I'm not saying don't be concerned about the lunatic ravings of lunatics, but, you know, when you've only got so much attention span or energy or resources or whatever, if everything is treated with the same focus and intensity as every other thing, then you're not... It's almost like you're using up your own resources, getting overwrought to an unfortunate extent with these cases. Yes, they're all dramatic. They're all interesting. They all are concerning on some level, but it's like they're not really showing up on the color weather radar as an imminent thing happening to your town within the next 22 minutes. And I don't mean to minimize or naysay, but Jesus. Do you get the sense of where I'm coming from? I mean, and maybe I'm just cranky because I don't feel well, but it's like an endless litany of shit that chances are will never happen.
But it came, Scott, it came perilously close to happening.
How close did they come on January 6th?
Exactly.
The story Robin read about Dave Williams here in Colorado, we're a blue state. And it's happening here in Colorado. They are a clear and present danger.
I mean, this guy, the reason we know about this is because Scott McFarland tweeted out his little memo. And, yeah, by the way, he's from Grapevine, Texas, because of course. And today at his sentencing hearing, for plotting the violent overthrow of the government of the United States, he got 2 years in prison on a single felony. And the felony didn't even take into account, I mean, this was released as part of his the sentencing proceeding, but it didn't fucking matter. He got 2 years. And the gravity of it, Scott, is that failed insurrections that are not adequately punished become dress rehearsals. My pal Joy in Ann Arbor was talking earlier today about the fact that these fuckers may well be the ones counting the votes. I mean, that not may well are the ones who will count the votes. Unless there's some major change in the elections of 2024 in the House, the maggot caucus will be the ones who certify the election in January of 2025.
Well, then the people on our side need to get busy and need to enlist other people to assist us in the effort. I mean, that's the way it's always been.
But we also need a Justice Department that's willing to take this shit seriously. Remember, a West Virginia guy named Derek Evans, I mentioned this earlier in the week, fucker was convicted of a misdemeanor for attacking the Capitol of the United States on January 6th, spent 6-9 months, I don't care, in jail. He calls it prison. It was just jail because he was busted on a misdemeanor. And now the fucker is running for Congress, and he's running a huge political grift out of it. And he's got a better than even chance of going to Congress in 24 and being one of the people who is certifying the vote. And he's a January 6th insurrectionist.
Where is he based?
West Virginia.
West Virginia. Well, I think that the West Virginia voters and citizens need to get busy. There's not a lot that... I mean, if we all take care of our own little domains, it would work out better, I think.
West Virginia voters need to get woke.
Do what?
Yeah, well, West Virginia, you're right. And we've got two crummy little congressional districts and two seats in the Senate.
Jesus, that's not many.
And, well, I don't know, if we lose enough population, maybe eventually the progressives will outnumber the weirdos.
Well, there's always hope for that. I mean, look at California. It wasn't that long ago that this state was headed by the likes of Ronald Wilson Reagan. You know, granted, that's 50 years ago. But things can change. I'm not saying they always do. I'm just saying that they can. If people behave in a more appropriate and positive way.
Christopher has his hand up.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bogart the joint.
Oh, that's okay. Go, Christopher.
Hey, everybody. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
But I wanted to add something to this where, I mean, we see that Fox News and Onan and all that shit, they have activated, you know, a wing or a battalion of the Christo Nazi army in this country, right? It's the incel battalion. I mean, they go around and they do mash their guerrilla.
And it's been established long since that there's a hell of a lot of overlap between the Nazis and the incels and the men's rights advocates and the men going their own way.
Lone wolves. Yeah. I mean, and this shit can't be taken lightly, Scott. I'm sorry, I just can't. This is going on. So I just want, and the other thing we've said a million times, all of us, when you leave unaccounted for criminal presidents dating back to Tricky Dicky, what happens? It culminates in Donnie, right?
Yeah, there's a bright red through line.
Yep.
And
I'd like to go back even further than that and say that Abraham Lincoln got it started when he basically pardoned all the Confederates.
There you go. Yeah, you can go back that far. Sure.
And Warren Gamaliel Harding died out from under any consequences he would have faced for Teapot Dome, giving us Calvin Coolidge and the Roaring Twenties. We know how that ended.
And Herbie, yeah. But I think, Scott, I get what you're saying as far as resources are scarce, as far as people on the intelligent, rational side, and that, you know, we should, you know, the thing is, we still play by Marcus or Queensberry rules when it comes to politics. They don't do that on the other side at all.
Yeah, they rabbit punch, they kidney punch, they kick, they'll kick you in the crotch.
Shivs are in play.
Shivs, poke you in the eyes. You know, and the Marcus of Queensberry rules is helpless against that. Yes. But I think what I'm trying to come back to with this this Larry Brock guy from Texas is that he had a plan to massacre the Democratic caucus and members of the Biden administration, and he only got charged with one felony and five misdemeanors. And it's only going to cost him 2 years of his life. That scares me. That tells me that the United States Department of Justice does not in any wise take this seriously. I started early in the program, I played the clip of Nicole Wallace saying 800 days since January 6th, where are the Trump indictments?
Did the prosecutors in that particular case give any explanation as to why they went that they focused only in that direction?
Well, the case is such that.
Or are they finished? I mean, there could be a multiple pronged approach.
No, they're done. They're done with Larry Brock.
Well, see, I don't know. I wasn't really aware.
Yeah, they're done with him. 2 years. That's it. And that stuff comes from the top down. You see? Do you see what I mean? That means that the individual foot soldiers were not taken seriously. And if you can't get more than 2 years against Larry Brock, how in the hell are you ever going to impose responsibility and culpability on the guy who started it all, Donald fucking Trump? By the way, Jude in the Great Northwest points out Larry Brock was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force.
Well, that probably means he went through the Air Force Academy, which is nothing but a bunch of Christian fascists.
Right. And Jude references her dear friend Mikey Weinstein over at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Mikey graduated from the Air Force Academy. He was a JAG officer. Jude says the wrongs there that his grown kids were enduring was the catalyst for starting the MRFF. And it remains a cesspool of evangelical, toxic Christianity. But the reason Larry Brock gets 2 years is because there, and I kind of wish Billable was here. He could make this a little clearer for us. There are federal sentencing guidelines that determine sentences based in their upward and downward departures based upon the crime charged. This guy is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. He knew what he was doing. He had a plan that he was willing to execute upon. But does he get charged? Does he get charged with sedition, treason, anything?
One of my problems here is that any veteran, particularly an officer, has more than the enlisted, but the enlisted should have been nailed too. That participating in that insurrection should have been immediately busted to E1 and loss of all retirement and privileges and a dishonorable discharge.
Can you do that retroactively? I mean, he was retired.
Oh, Doctor, if you are an officer in the United States military, you have been made a gentleman by an act of Congress. Everybody who's an officer has become a gentleman that went through Congress. And yes, an officer can have his buttons removed and drummed out.
Some of us
and
still
why
remember
they're not doing it.
Some of us still remember the opening credits to Branded with Chuck Connors.
Isn't that what was supposed to happen to Flynn after he got convicted?
Robin, stop reading my mind as soon as you began speaking.
But well, yeah, and Flynn is now suing the United States government for $50 million instead.
Jesus, what a fucking joke. Unbelievable. That's disgusting.
Well, I'd like to shift just a little bit here. And Robin, you've always said stay a long way away from everybody, wear your mask, blah, 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 blah. Last Friday, my wife went down to help with the reorganization of our storage area for the Master Food Preservers, worked with three people, her being the third one. And on Monday, she started feeling poorly, took a COVID test. It's positive.
Oh, damn. Please give her our love.
Well, my voice is a little bit strange tonight because even though I am still testing negative, I have a very scratchy throat and feel a little bit warm. Couldn't sleep for shit last night. So I think I'm coming down with it as well. And my my wife and I have, I mean, we've, ever since the first goddamn day, it's been rubbing the surfaces, having the hand sanitizer, wearing your mask when you go into a grocery store, blah, 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 blah. And since she didn't start showing symptoms till Monday, we were still sleeping in the same bed and, you know, all the rest of that stuff. And I'm sleeping out in the mother-in-law unit now just in the hopes that I can avoid it, but I don't think I have, but I'm not testing positive yet. I just feel shitty. So
there's a lag.
Seriously.
There's a lag for that, Roger. You may test positive tomorrow.
Yeah, that could be.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wearing
again,
my
the
mask.
Testing, and again, the testing is a little sketchy still.
Still.
Well, it's better than nothing.
Right? Yeah.
And you're more likely to get a false positive than a false negative from the research I've looked at. But we've got plenty of tests on the shelf, and I'll test myself again tomorrow morning. But I couldn't go to sleep last night. I was lying in bed, and at 4 o'clock this morning, I finally started getting a little bit of sleep and then was awake again at 6. So hopefully I'll be sufficiently exhausted to where I can go to bed around 8:30, 9 o'clock tonight and go to sleep. Thought about even smoking a little bud.
Might not be the worst thing in the world. Might irritate your scratchy throat, but not much beyond that. Make sure you got some potato chips on hand for when the munchies kick in.
Hey, Roger. I just got a batch of new test kits from the government in the mail just a few days ago.
Ordered some a couple of days ago.
Roger, let me share this with you, my friend.
Hey, Steve.
Hang on just a second, Steve.
Hey, Robin.
Hang on just a second. They are going to shut down the 8 free tests a month in May.
Yep.
May, that's the last chance, huh? Shit.
Yep.
And you get 8 a month.
Order them up now while you can.
Yeah, I'll order some more then.
You're exactly right. Yep, you'll have to pay for them. But, Roger, here's the rub.
You have to do it each month. Go, Steve.
Here's the rub, my friend. Karen tested positive for about 3 weeks. We ate off the same plate. We slept in the same bed. I never did test positive. So there's a very good chance that you have it, but a low threshold enough where it will not kick in a positive on one of those home tests because I felt like ass right along with her, but I never did test positive.
Well, that's so sort of what I'm suspecting. Mm-hmm. Is that my resistance or whatever is my body's fighting it off really, really good. And, I got it, but it's not going on the positive side. But right. I'll test every morning for another 2 or 3 days.
I can't tell you how many tests I burnt through, you know, and testing her and she would be positive and I'd test me and negative and I couldn't figure it out. And nobody could, you know, it's just – just the way this thing rolls, man. It's a very peculiar virus.
But I'm not in any way, shape, or form getting sick to where I think I'm going to end up in the hospital or anything like that. It's
maybe a little bit of brain fog or some minor crap like that.
In Humboldt County, when we were teaching, every year it would just run through the school, and we called it the Humboldt crud. And at the beginning of the school year, as soon as September got into October and the rains got started, everybody would have a 3 or 4 day run of just feeling shitty. But you normally just worked through it because what the hell else you gonna do? I'm not gonna sit around home, twiddle my thumbs, and have twice the work to take care of what the substitute teacher did, because substitute teachers don't grade papers or anything like that. So you go to work and you give them more busy work instead of really doing lectures and all that. And that's kind of how I feel right now. If I were still teaching, I'd still be able to go to work, although I probably wouldn't just because it's COVID. But I could go to work. I just wouldn't do it. So
yeah, but well, Roger and you and Patricia are not headed to the hospital because you decided to get fully vaccinated instead of going the ivermectin route or drinking your own pee.
Well, we've both had 5 shots.
Yeah.
Yeah, you missed the humor of that, Roger.
Yeah.
You didn't use ivermectin or drink your own pee or keep onions in your socks.
And yell at the clouds.
Put
Vicks on your on the palms of your feet. That works.
Yeah.
And to be clear, there's something I need to clarify, Robin. That soup, by the way.
Damn it, you beat me to it. I was trying to break in and go, Steve? Yeah, Robin?
Soup. That was freaking hilarious. But and I'm not just saying this because she's from Georgia. I have no love for this woman whatsoever. In fact, she's an embarrassment. But she has 10 toes, unlike me. That was a photo was photoshopped, so
was it? I've seen multiple photos of her.
According to Snopes, yeah, that photo was photoshopped.
Oh,
she has all the
shit. Well, whoever did a great job.
Nah, somebody fooled Snopes with a prosthetic normal human foot. That's what feet look like on the on Norblap 9, the home of the amorphous multi-limbed aliens.
Well, I'm in a glass house, so I can't throw stones. You know, that's something me and old Mars have in common. So you gotta love it, man.
Since I saw those sport feet, I haven't been able to bring myself to eat KFC coleslaw anymore.
Because it comes with a spork.
It comes with a spork.
Hell, rock and roll.
God, our kids would get mad at each other, and one of them would eventually look at who they're mad at and say, I'm going to stab you in your sleep with a spork. But you mentioned ivermectin. I saw an article earlier today. You know, the ivermectin dude shuffled off this coil last week
or
so.
Yeah, I heard that story. Yeah.
Well, it turns out, and again, you know, there's been I find it interesting. There's been a lot of braying about TikTok, and I join in some of it. It's nothing but a huge backdoor for Chinese spyware. I mean, it just is. And it is so ubiquitous, you can't get away from it now. And unlike other platforms, you know, Elno Muskrat said, no, you can't post anything from another platform on Twitter. TikTok deliberately integrates any platform out there, making it, again, ubiquitous. Little C Catholic, universal. And Democrats and Republicans alike are beginning to go, you know, this might not be the best idea. On the other hand, you hear next to no one talking about Telegram.
Or Google.
Well, but hold up, Steve.
Okay.
Telegram is owned by Mother Moscovy. It is strictly a Russian thing. And there are oodles of Americans, particularly right-wing Americans, who have created these Telegram channels. For instance, you remember the Ohio Nazis who were running a Nazi homeschooling group? Remember them?
Yeah.
They were running the channel on Telegram. The dead ferret dewormer guy last week ran a channel on Telegram. And now we find out that there is a Telegram channel for people who want to treat their children's autism with horse paste. And this just makes me particularly sick. And yes, I'm
going to... Yeah, he decroaked the guy that promoted that. Croaked.
Yeah. Oh, it was
hard up.
Oh, he died horribly.
Yep.
And
in large part.
Yeah, but I'm going to loop back on this. And again, what Roger was talking about, what I was talking about, all these bans on trans kids being denied medical care that will save their freaking lives. Meanwhile, you've got a group of people on Telegram. I mean, you talk about non-consent. You got a group of parents on Telegram who are rubbing their autistic children's feet with ivermectin. Here's one post. I've been applying ivermectin liquid to my granddaughter's feet, belly button, and swabbing her ears for 6 weeks now. She complains of sporadic, blurry vision and sometimes headaches. And it's not just ivermectin. I mean, there is... Okay, let's be clear. If you go to Nigeria and you pick up a case of river blindness, a parasitic infection, there is a human titrated dosage of ivermectin that will cure your Nigerian river blindness.
Would it work for trichinosis if you got that? Is this similar?
I'm off my brief on that. But
yeah, we're not doctors. We just play one on the horn.
But you have to have a prescription from a licensed physician or nurse practitioner, physician, whatever the state's laws are, to get that. And I'm guessing the doctor would say, so you've been to Nigeria?
No.
You got the river blindness?
No, but I was born in Kenya.
Just let me wrap.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. But we're talking about children who can't manifest consent. And they're not using human prescription strength ivermectin. They are using massively concentrated veterinary ivermectin that you can just go down to the local farm and feed and buy.
I.e. horse paste.
Or horse liquid. I mean, these things are titrated for 800-pound animals and concentrated for 800-pound animals. And so these are kids who have autism, Asperger's, Down syndrome, and on this fucking Telegram channel, the parents are like, you're such a good parent. It doesn't matter if their heads explode. And it's the Telegram channel actually promotes the veterinary ivermectin as a cure for autism, which or Down syndrome, neither of which are curable because neither of which are diseases. And there is nobody out there talking about shutting down Telegram when Telegram is a propaganda tool of Mother Moscovy. Go ahead, Steve. I'm sorry.
Well, this whole thing with horse stuff really got started back with DMSO back in the 80s.
Well, yeah. But, Steve, you had something to say, please.
This reminds me of a MASH episode where there was a person who was in – I'm trying to think here. I don't remember circumstances, but a person came into camp and Hawkeye and BJ diagnosed it, or BJ said the person had schistosomiasis. And Margaret says, schistosomiasis? What the hell is that? That's not real. And Colonel Parter said, oh, yeah. It's something that people get when they wade waist high in the River Nile. And that reminded me what you said about the thing in Nigeria.
Yeah. Well, I mean, check out these side effects. This Telegram channel has been operating for 8 months. The children who are being subjected to this treatment suffer from vomiting, change in complexion, seizures, lethargy, hyperactivity, agitation, and headaches. One quote from a message says, major brain fog today after splitting headache yesterday. Bleeding or mucus or vomiting or diarrhea or acne or peeling or aches and pains or hot flashes and sweating are all good signs of clearing out your body.
Oh, God.
This is healing. Keep going.
Don't forget the leeches.
But it.
You know what? What you're describing is this. The solutions, quote unquote, to these issues are not. I mean, in a time in the past, they may have been shutting down these portals. The problem is that's not going to happen. It strikes me, and look, and maybe I'm wrong, that the solution – excuse me a sec while I use my air quotes. Did you all hear my air quotes?
Yes.
Okay.
Around solution.
I can see him from here.
Okay, good. Is to educate people on stuff.
Yeah, but Steve, let me push back on that for just a second, please.
No, of course. What do you mean, please?
I love the idea of educating people on stuff. But we live in a post-fact world. Is that me?
We live in idiocracy. Robin.
Well, we do. Get water from the toilet. No. What I'm getting, there are lines we can draw. There are dots we can connect. It wasn't that many years ago that parents who were, I guess, socially embarrassed that their kids were neurodivergent were giving them chlorine bleach enemas.
Ouch.
And other stuff.
I've heard of coffee, but not bleach.
Oh, yeah. Janet Jackson said coffee enemas may wash out the sad cells. I remember that. That was the 1990s.
Sad cells?
What if, yes.
But what if you're hypersensitive?
Sad cells say it so much.
Against coffee like me and you are, Robin. I mean, wouldn't that just drive us nuts?
Yeah. But
I
see,
don't do that.
Not, but remember during the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings when he talked about him and Squee and Queef boofing?
Queef.
Oh yeah, the boofing. Yeah, of course.
We remember what boofing is, right?
Yeah, it's in the judiciary record or the congressional hearing record.
Butt fucking.
No, it is not.
It's whatever it's
boofing,
like.
Boofing is the introduction of alcohol into the body via the absorptive properties of the colon.
Oh, that was Kavanaugh.
Yeah, beer.
That's Kavanaugh.
Beer enemas, liquor enemas.
Well, that's what he said it was, or that's what it is?
That's what it is.
I disagree.
He said he was doing that with Sweden.
No, it is not. You can disagree till hell freezes over, but this has actually got a long history. Tim Dorsey was writing Florida comic novels about it back in the mid-90s. People
who are those two characters, his friends?
Squee and Queef.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
Robin, you are
they going to be at the Supreme Court next?
What, Steve?
Oh, my God, Robin. Sometimes you just...
When the Iraqi prisoners would fast, they would
feed them rectally. These, for some reason or another, right-wingers are rectally obsessed.
Don't say. They all get
The thing is, the last little point that I want to make is that Bobby Kennedy Jr. has beaten this drum for over a decade now that vaccines cause autism. It's not fucking true.
He misled me. I was listening to him a long time ago.
Hey, Jack.
Hey.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. It's sunny but chilling down. We got a freeze warning for the pipes and all that, you know.
In Shreveport?
Yep.
Jeez.
And, you know, yesterday it was like, too hot and muggy. I had to turn on the AC, and then like later in that day, I had to turn, or maybe it was that evening, I had to turn on the heat or something. It's just, you know, it's up and down. But I wanted to comment. I think it was, let's see, when you were talking about the Russian TikTok, I guess.
TikTok is Chinese. Telegram is Muscovy.
When you mentioned the Russian one, I recall I haven't worked with it in quite a while, but there's a web server called Nginx. It's spelled NGINX, and it's one of the major web server software packages. And the other one, maybe somebody could help me, but I've forgotten the other one that's used, you know, like quite a lot. You know, it serves up your web pages and that kind of, you know, when people do a HTTP request, you know. And I saw something that it was like, it started out, it was originally developed in Russia, you know. And they have like, you know,
that's like Kaspersky antivirus, really.
You know, it's like open software, I guess, now. So I guess people should be able to check it out. But it's got, you know, these automatic updates where it'll go out and check if there's an update and then, you know, download it and install it, you know, automatically if you want. And, you know, I was just thinking, you know, if there was some kind of backdoor or whatever still, you know, that'd be a big, big problem, you know. But, you know, I never really got, you know, I tried to tweet about it a little bit and get, you know, like a down low on it, and I never could. But, you know, I'm suspicious of stuff that's developed, you know, in other countries. I mean, you know, health chips that come from other countries that we put in, you know, defense or consumer products, you know. Anyway, that's
no, I share the I share the same misgivings. Listen, I hate to do this. We got 20 minutes left in the program. We are $800 in the hole. We will be $1,100 in the hole on Monday. We've got 4 more broadcast days after this, after which I'm gone for 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 4 broadcast days. we're going to end in a gigantic hole for March. And I'm not even including the time when I'm gone in the fundraising, because I just don't do that. But God, in the next 19 minutes, if we could make it so that there's not a monumental fundraising hole come Monday, it would be huge. And I'm not trying to over-dramatize. I'm not trying to dramatize at all. I'm just saying that it makes it really, really hard to keep all of this going under the present circumstances. And I thank everybody who has helped out. We got help last night from Amber, and that was so huge. We've had help all along from our kind internet friend and others who have jumped in. I know I hammer on it all the time, but it is the only way this thing keeps going. And for me to leave here and travel with a massive hole like that is, you know, it's just going to make it really, really hard. So if we could catch up with one more, $200 would mean that we were fully funded for this past Wednesday, let alone today or yesterday or today. Because for some reason or another, things run hot and cold.
Hey, Robin.
Yes, Steve.
I was ready to do that. I have to say this. I don't know if I told you, I'm a huge fan of playing hockey. I had gone to the place that I was storing my equipment for the past three and a half years. I hadn't been able to go for a number of reasons, and I was going to start back. And I went there to the storage place two weeks ago tomorrow, and all of my equipment is gone.
Oh no, shit.
All $2,000 worth of my equipment is gone. And
did somebody cut the lock off or something?
The way the storage worked was it was a room at the rink where a bunch of people had their stuff in there, and I went to get it, and I texted the person who was supposed to, the person who I paid every 6 months, and she's like, well, it was there. And I said, well, it's not now. Emailing back with the general manager, and I got a really weird message the other day that she says, well, we're trying to figure out the last time you were at the rink. And I'm thinking, I don't know what the fuck that has to do with the price of beef, but and that's something, I talk on here about how much I'm a hockey fan, but I really fucking loved, and I sucked. I was awful to play the sport.
Hey, you can skate. You're miles ahead of me.
And I will tell you, it's actually left me
depressed.
It's I've been really surprised how bad it's been. I mean, I have been dreaming about it. I have stopped listening to or watching games or even following the team that I normally follow because I can't even think about it without being nauseous. I'm surprised it has affected me that much.
God damn it! I hope you find it. I don't know how you're going to track it down. You need Columbo or the poker face.
Well, I don't know if anybody's ever going to find it, and I mean, who knows? And what sucks is I'm probably going to, unless they say, we're just going to pay you money for the lost equipment.
I'm sorry, Steve. Don't hold your breath on that one.
Well, I'm not so sure. But we'll see. And that what really sucks is if I have to sue them, which I don't think is I think that's a definite possibility. What sucks is there's only three rinks in all of New York City that are year-round rinks. One of them is complete. It is not accessible with via public transit, so I can't get there. And so there's essentially two. And if I sue them, even if I win, I can never go back there.
Right.
And it's just.
Aren't you moving anyway?
Well, that's going to be it's not immediate eventually. But even so, the bigger issue is, and again, I don't want to get in. There's a lot of shit going on with this, and I won't kid you. It's tied to my physical health. It's tied to my mental health, and I know that's not the concern of the rink, but the fact is it was. This was a big part of me reengaging socially post. COVID, et cetera.
Well, I mean, you're a lawyer, but can I just jump in here on this for a second?
Of course.
Do they not have an insurance policy?
I actually did a little bit of research about this. I haven't broached that subject with them yet. My understanding is generally these types of policies, particularly storage policies, don't cover theft.
Well, then claim that it was accidentally mistaken for somebody else's property,
which would be fine. The problem is let me step back a sec. It in terms of a storage place like that, the standard is pretty minimal in terms of what their duty is to safeguard it. But in this instance, they don't have any idea when it was actually there, number one. Number two, they had – the storage place was in a certain part of the rink, and they moved it to a different part of the rink before COVID, maybe six months to a year before COVID. And I think what's really going on here is they don't have any idea
where anybody's shit is.
It all went from one room to another. But along with what you just said, what they should have done was taken an inventory.
Well, yeah. So what you're talking one, you do you have receipts where you paid them?
I have the emails where I paid them.
Perfect. So we got that. The next thing is, the thing is, negligence is a hell of a lot easier to prove than theft.
Right.
And boom, you're in their insurance policy.
Right. That's what I'm probably going to have to do. But part of my real consternation was the responses I got where, like I said, when I texted the woman, I said, look, it's not there. well, it was there. And I was like, well, it's not now. And I didn't put it in my pocket and accidentally walk out with it. And she tried to say, well, we're not responsible. Well, you know, it's fine. Maybe they put it, we're not responsible for any lost stuff in the contract, which I've never actually seen. A lot of times, just because you put shit in there doesn't make it enforceable because you have certain – particularly in New York City, you have certain consumer laws which say, no, sorry. And even if it is in a contract that they're not responsible, a court will basically say, yeah, but – You have to at least do a minimum of keeping track of something. The fact that you moved it and you don't have any idea if when you moved it, even though it was in the same facility, whether or not you moved that person's stuff, you have no record of anything. You have no record of even a modicum of, oh, yeah, we went and checked. I think all they did was send an email out every 6 months to say, hey, do you want to still pay? Yep. And they never checked. They never – and something else, the general manager said, she says, well, it looks here like you weren't paying for a slot for your equipment. And I thought – and I said, all I know is what they told – what's-her-face told me to pay.
Steve.
You're an attorney. File a claim against them. Well, it doesn't hurt anything.
No, I understand. I don't know who to
file. Being an attorney, you just call them. Say, I'm an attorney. Who's your insurance carrier? You call the carrier. You file a claim.
Right. This is the call your carrier letter.
Yep.
Okay.
Call the guy.
I was just going to say, I need to call the guys. I need to happen.
Yeah, see.
In this case, I am the guy.
You see, Steve, you're getting it from both sides. Steve handles insurance stuff.
I know.
Steve gets call your carrier letters.
Okay.
I used to send call your carrier letters.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to
say. Because, and the difference here is that, you know, you do commercial and corporate, and you're kind of pointing out the difference between things like personal injury negligence law and you know, the stuff that you do or the stuff that Billable does.
Let me tell you something. I'm going to do what Steve just said. I'm going to email them and say, listen, Steve and George Stan, and I'm going to say, I know you know who he is.
Yeah.
Because everyone does.
Google him. If you don't, Google
you
that.
Don't know
yeah.
who he is.
He's on the Google.
He's not. He not only says call the guy, but actually
he is the guy.
He's the guy. And the guy told me.
File a claim. Who is your carrier? No, but you being an attorney, they have to. That's not information they can withhold.
Although to be honest, I would not email. I would use First Class United States Postal Service.
Well, I have a tracking mechanism on my email, so I know when they open shit.
Yeah, well, email beats a zero. Even a text. Text is submissible. Of course.
Hey, let me jump in for a second because we had responses to my dire little plea. Thank you to David in Florida. Thank you so very much. We are now down to $700. To go. And Kevin in Massachusetts, thank you. We are down to 650. And Jude and Women Standing have just gotten us down to 625. So, you know, another 25 bucks and we're done with Wednesday. And Henry, thank you, Henry. We're done with Wednesday, and we started on Thursday. We are at 575 to go. Thank you so much. And I'm sorry to make it sound so desperate, but there's something else. Okay, there's two stories. There's two stories I want to make sure we get to because they're kind of big deals. They are big deals. Who am I kidding? Today, and initially when I saw the story break, I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. But the International Criminal Court has issued an arrest warrant for Pooty for war crimes, particularly the war crimes associated with illegally removing Ukrainian children from Ukraine and into Mother Muscovy. And there probably is a, yeah, well, that's never going to go anywhere aspect to it, but the phrase issues arrest warrant has meaning. That means that Pooty is arrestable in any country which is a signatory and a member of the International Criminal Court. Nobody can accuse the United States of having had anything to do with this because we are not. It was the George W. Bush regime and we said, no, we can't do that. That would affect freedom. So Pooty can't travel anywhere that participates in the International Criminal Court. If there's a hilarity to that, it is that Pooty can still come to the United States because we won't honor the warrant because we are not a member. How's about that? The other story that I wanted to make sure we got to just came from the New York Times, and this is going to be heartbreaking for all the Wuhan lab leak freaks. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head are probably inconsolable right now. The World Health Organization has officially accused China, of withholding data that directly links the origins of COVID-19 to the illegal trade at a Wuhan market, and I'm going to have to look up what this means, in raccoon dogs. Now, I know what coon dog means. I know what coon dog means in Appalachia. I mean, there's red bones and blue heelers and blue ticks. When I was coming up through WVU, the name of the little student tavern in the basement of the mountain lair, the student union, was the Blue Tick Tavern. Blue tick hounds are wonderful. So are red bones. Blue heeler is not a hound. I'm sorry. Or it's not a coon hound. But blue ticks and red bones are big. Anybody who's ever read Where the Red Fern Grows knows about red bone coon hounds. But something in this headline tells me that we're not talking about coon dogs here. The little blurb that I can read without, you know, getting trapped by the firewall says, before the data disappeared, an international team of experts downloaded and began analyzing it, but the gene sequences were removed from a scientific database once the experts offered to collaborate on the analysis with their Chinese counterparts. Oopsie. So, once again, that story from a couple of weeks ago, all about how I forget which intelligence agency said it was probably a lab leak, but they had low confidence. And, of course, the for-profit media was something less than spectacular in pointing out the low confidence estimate on the allegation. Low confidence that it was a lab leak. This is what happens when animals are put in close proximity to animals that they don't live in close proximity to in the wild, and here we are.
I just posted something from Wikipedia about a raccoon dog, by the way.
In the chat?
Oh.
Yep. It appears that they are the
hunting dogs to hunt raccoons. From the brief stuff I was reading through.
Steve, I just posted something for you to read.
Raccoon dogs, are you talking about like a canine type creature, or are you talking about something on the menu at the snack bar?
Knew somebody was going to go there.
Well, I did just for clarity, that's all. Hi, Clarity.
Hi, Clarity.
Hi, Clarity. No, it's a coon hunting dog, and it looks nothing like a red bone hound.
Was Sir Paul McCartney going to write a song about the raccoon dog, too?
You mean like
What's
Jet?
What's his name?
Rocky
the Raccoon.
You said Paul McCartney, and I thought Jet. Because Jet was actually a song about a dog.
Oh.
Really?
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Gosh, man.
Your father was a... Yeah. Jet is a song about a black lab.
Is
that off Venus and Mars rock show?
Ah, no.
My favorite song from that album is Medicine Jar.
I love that. Which album it's on, but one of my favorites is Picasso's Last Words, because that song was actually a challenge to McCartney. I guess they were all sitting around stoned one night or whatever, as the story goes, and somebody said, he said, well, I can write a song about anything. That's a little more Ringo than Paul, if you want to get right down to it.
No, that was good. That was good.
And so they handed him Picasso's last words. Picasso's last words were, drink to me, drink to my health, you know I can't drink anymore. And then he died in his sleep a few hours later. And so you get it. It's just a beautiful song. And he wrapped it into a second song, treat her gently, treat her kind, she doesn't even know her own mind. Yeah, thanks for the misogyny, Paul. Drink to me, drink to my health, you know I can't drink anymore. Yeah. I love Picasso's last words. That's just a great song. Wow, we've covered a lot of ground, and hey, we've gotten down. Thank you, Jack. We are down to 5:55. 555. Not right. Well, that's a hell of a lot better than 999. Yeah. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you. So especially those of you in time zones that aren't this one, anybody doing anything because Steve started this last week. Anybody doing anything for St. Patrick's Day?
Got no. Corned beef and cabbage in the crock pot. Been cooking all day. Smells like a fart in my kitchen. But
shut up! It's that no. Don't ruin my dreams of corned beef and cabbage that I will not be having. And that's a damn shame.
When you cook cabbage, it smells like a fart. I can't help it, man.
Well, it's true. It does. But
it's the best tasting fart there is, then.
But corned beef, you know, I could eat my weight in corned beef and cabbage, and you know, it wouldn't be a carb problem.
The cabbage is good for you.
But
we got potatoes and turnips, rollers, and carrots.
Yummy. Of course, I remember. And he's Irish, okay? He's Irish, so yeah, remember that.
Hey, Cletus.
There's little Cletus there. Hi, honey.
Yeah, she must have heard you. She's some digging at me.
Hey, sweetheart. I was thinking about celebrating with an Irish 7-course meal this evening. 6-pack of Guinness and a boiled potato.
Where's the Jameson in there?
That's dessert.
Oh, okay.
But I'm waiting. But I will not touch Jameson again until Secret Sandwich Society reopens and begins making pickles again.
Wait a minute. What happened to them? Did they burn down or something like that?
Yeah, years ago.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
God, I think it was November of 20 because it was kind of sweet. I had just come out. And I put on, because I used to like to do this for the staff at Secret every so often, I'd fire up the smoker and I would do like a smoked turkey and some pulled pork and some brisket and some smoked Kaneka. Smoking smoked sausage is redundant, but damn, it was good. And I would put on a staff meal because they were always very kind to me, and I loved them all dearly. And so I put on a staff meal, and everybody was like, Robin, that's awesome. And by way of thanking me, they gave me the iconic for around here, black Secret Sandwich Society hoodie, which I wear. I don't wear a lot because I don't want to ruin it, because it turned out to be the last Secret Sandwich Society hoodie. Because a couple of days, you know, not very long after, a couple of weeks maybe, that very old building burnt to the ground. And it has been, it's been a Herculean labor for my friends to get the Secret Sandwich Society back up and running. They rebuilt the entire building. It's coming along. It's almost done. Everybody in this area who knows their food has begun to salivate. And I, for one, because it will be one of my cheat days to get, they were the best French fries in the entire state of West Virginia and probably some surrounding states too. But they did loaded fries, big basket of fries with a generous ladle of their warm pimento cheese across it with bacon and jalapenos.
Oh, you're driving me crazy.
Oh.
Real potatoes and peanut oil.
Yes.
Right, and they won't have ketchup. If it's a genuine, you know, boardwalk fry type atmosphere.
Oh no, they had ketchup, but it was ketchup. No, it was ketchup that they made.
Oh, okay, or just vinegar.
Mm.
Yeah, and of course, but that pimento cheese. So I'll have fry, and then hopefully maybe I'll be able to do them a staff meal. Yeah, it burned, Steve. And like I said, it was this time 3 years ago that me and a dear friend of mine were dancing at St. Patrick's Day, and the pandemic was hitting, and she looked at me and said, I don't think we'll ever dance like this again. And we haven't.
Are the fries big, hefty fries, or are they skinny fries?
Oh, no, they're hefty. They're hand-cut. and they're twice fried. You know, you
hand cut. Yep.
You flash fry them once, drain them, and then you fry them again, and that's how you get them. In peanut oil, and that's how you get them crispy on the outside and mushy in the middle, which is how a French fry should be.
Okay, well, then you probably won't like this, but check it out anyway when you're in Washington. If they're still around, there are two locations that the last time I checked are still around. One is in the Orlandria section of Alexandria, and the other is up the street on the opposite side of where Ford's Theater is. It's called the Waffle Shop. In your D.C. travels, you may have seen the one in D.C., if it's still there. They have those skinny fries, and I'm telling you, pound for pound, they are some dynamically good fries.
Oh, to the extent that I hardly eat potatoes anymore. I told my daughter-in-law the other day, she made homemade mashed potatoes, and I'm like, you know, this is practically ice cream for me now.
It's the world's most perfect food, French fries. If somebody said to me, you can only eat one food for the rest of your life, I would say French fries.
Ooh, nachos for me.
Going back to the raccoon dog, it turns out that they're raised for their fur and also used for their meat, which goes right back to the wet market in Wahoon, spreading it from the wet market.
Wait a minute, known for their fur? Is that what Marjorie Taylor Greene was wearing as the fringe?
No, that was white, just like her.
You can buy it.
These are kind of a, I want to say kind of, no, it's not piebald, but they're stripy, according to the Wikipedia picture.
And they climb trees and hibernate.
But they're a dog.
No, they're more of a fox.
Oh, okay. Well, when I saw a raccoon dog, I immediately thought of the, and I've seen them on social media. It's kind of a cousin of the American raccoon, which, by the way, the German for is absolutely perfect. The German word for a raccoon is Waschbär. Because it's a little bear that washes its hands.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Scott,
the Japanese critter is called a tanuki. T-A-N-U-K-I.
The only good raccoon is the one that's flat in the middle of the road.
Oh, now stop it. They're smart.
They eat chickens. They eat chickens.
So do you.
Hey, Scott,
I raised
them. The
raccoon just came and stole them.
Hey, Scott, to answer your question, Scott, Marjorie's jacket that she was wearing at the State of the Union with the fringe, with the furry fringe,
yeah,
that's all saved off of her ex-husband's backside.
And died.
Oh, dear, dear.
Did you know that possums, other than parasites, don't get any kind of viral sicknesses?
No, they don't. I love possums. Possums are wonderful.
They don't. And they have been trying to synthesize that and figure it out and maybe transfer that immunity system to humans somehow. Wouldn't that be a cool thing?
Yeah. You know?
And they eat humongous quantities of ticks and don't get Lyme disease or rabies.
Right.
Right. The only thing they get is parasites.
But the saddest thing about possums is the lifespan of a possum is like 3 years.
And their saliva is a good skin softener, so I hear.
How do you get the possum to spit on you, Steve?
Yeah, I don't know. That's just what I heard.
Grab him by the tail.
Goddamn possum, and the possum goes, yeah.
Soup. You've got to agitate them and irritate them to get them to the point of spitting.
Shut up, Robin.
Shut up, Steve.
Muttering,
like
muttering
a fucking cobra.
Muttering a dirty name at you under their little possum breath.
But I'm not crazy. I've heard that. you know.
Steve, I got to know.
You're not crazy. What?
Steve, have you seen the first episode of Ted Lasso?
No.
It's out. Season 3, episode 1. Have you not watched Ted Lasso?
No.
I'm jealous. You get to watch two seasons plus all.
Where is it? Prime?
No, Apple TV Plus. Apple TV Plus.
That's why I don't have Apple. I guess I need to get it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this is only the best TV that's been made in the last 50 years.
Good God, then. I'll get it tonight.
But we've got a split of opinions in the circuit here in this house. We were all excited, Annette and I. It dropped on Wednesday evening, and we cuddled up in bed and went to watch it, and we were both just, because we've been waiting for season 3 since Christ was a corporal in the army of God. Yeah, I mean, it took longer to get season 3 of Ted Lasso out than it did to get the second Boston album, for God's sakes.
Chinese
democracy. Right, yeah.
Great minds.
I loved it. It's a little, the first episode's a little dark, but I think I understand the story arc.
Now, Prime doesn't carry it if you pay. Sometimes they'll carry it over.
I don't know. I mean, you can probably go to Apple and just buy it on an individual episode basis.
Okay. It's like that Beatles Get Back thing. I finally just got it on Blu-ray. My God, that is incredible.
Yeah, God.
If you're a Beatles fan, you have to watch that.
Oh, there were some real sad moments there, too.
There is, but it's like watching a Picasso painting come together, you know?
Yeah. But Annette was like, God damn it. And I was like, gotta be patient. Gotta be patient. Because the story arcs, you know, the story arcs have gone through some things, and there's a little more drama than there was in the first two seasons. But no, Steve, you gotta. It took me forever to get Tracy to watch it, and then she was like, "Okay, hooked."
Hey, Robin, how are you enjoying Mandalorian so far?
It's good. We're gonna watch that tonight.
It's good. Yeah.
Every time we start to watch The Mandalorian, the opening theme music just reminds me of how much it sounds like the Clint Eastwood theme music.
Oh, okay.
There's everything but the.
That's interesting.
Wah, 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 wah. And you know the Mandalorian is a Western with a baby Yoda in it.
Yeah, very much so. It's all along that lines that. That formula, right?
Yeah. The funniest thing I heard, because I bear no love for Joanne Rowling, I saw a clip a couple of nights ago, maybe last night, of a guy pointing out that the Harry Potter series is nothing but a wholesale ripoff of Star Wars. From the plot to the plot devices, it's just a repurposed Star Wars, and it made perfect sense. And of course,
I never heard that said before. I only watched one Harry Potter movie, or that's it. So I don't know much about
good
it.
Good for you.
I've never watched one.
Really. Well, we come from an age when we cut our teeth on Lord of the Rings, and nothing else is going to come close.
No.
Have you got HBO Max?
Yeah.
I'll tell you one that I'm happy is back. They're about two episodes in to the second season. Is the dramatic series Perry Mason?
Oh yes, we've seen both of the episodes so far for this season.
That is the first season just knocked me on my ass, and I kept checking for when the second season was going to launch, which was earlier this month. God, that is a well done show.
And sometime this year on HBO, the next season of Tokyo 911 is coming on. And God, that show's fantastic.
Are they going to do another season of House of Dragon? That was good.
Yes. Yeah. I believe they are.
Yeah, there's another one of those coming.
Good.
Let's see.
And I heard poker. The Orville. The rumor has it they're going to do another season of the Orville, if anybody was into
that. I'll be collecting Social Security by the time they get season 3 of the Orville out.
I'm in mourning. Ozarks is done. They're not renewing that. So I'm in apple mourning over that.
I'm hearing good things about 1923.
Hey, hello, real quick.
Yeah.
Hello. Sorry to interrupt. I need to head out. I'm at the office and I need to get home, but I wanted to say I actually pasted something into the chat about have a great weekend, yada yada yada.
You too.
Yes.
Well, Steve, file a claim. Do it with your own carrier. With your own renters or homeowners?
I don't have any of that because, you know what, stupid me, but, you know, stupid me.
Okay.
Being
an attorney, you can find their carrier.
But, Steve, don't castigate yourself because no. That's a common theme among lawyers. It's kind of one of those physician heal thyself kind of things. You know, give out the other, make sure you get your renter's insurance, and then you don't get your own.
Right. We sometimes can be very prone to do as I say, not as I do. I know that.
Yeah, because you do it for a living, and then when you do it for yourself, it just it makes your head hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is one of those things where you. I mean, yeah. $2,000. I had a pair of skates that I bought a few years ago. I wore them probably 5 times. $350. And the shit that I had wasn't even that expensive, at least as hockey equipment goes. But, in any event.
They got your skates too, didn't they?
I had everything in my hockey bag. Everything. Pants,
just call them and tell them you're a lawyer. You want to know who their insurance carrier is. They got to tell you.
I don't want to say I'm a lawyer because I have a feeling that's
going to... Don't smarten up a chump.
Yeah, that's going to shut them down.
Well said. Well said, Robin.
Yeah, I don't want to shut them down and be like not getting...
My concern is if you don't tell them you're a lawyer, they may not want to be forthcoming with the information. But there's a way to figure it out.
And remember, your statute runs from the minute you found out your shit wasn't there.
Yeah, and it's got like 2 years.
Well, in New York,
that varies from state to state. I don't know what it is in New York.
Yeah, 1 year for conversion.
It's still 2 years for negligence, isn't it?
It's 3.
Yeah. Well, you're good. Listen, y'all, good. I gotta get out of here. But thanks everybody everybody. You travel safely. Have a good evening and a great weekend, Steve. Thank you so much to everybody who jumped in and helped out. We're down to 555. 555.
Great show, Robin.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much. I feel like we covered some ground.
Soup.
God damn, you're quick on the draw. Soup. Have you taken Miss Karen to Q Korean barbecue yet?
Not yet.
I want to know the minute you do because I've been thinking a lot about that. I want one of those up here.
But Ferg was so spot on with that. You could get a can of Campbell's cream of chicken vegetable soup and just put a piece of toast on top of it.
And that's a bottomless pot. But yes,
he's right. He was right. And the more we thought about it, the more we got tickled about it. It was a running joke all last week and into this week.
So
we would just look at each other and go soup.
I will tell him that when I get off the air, that'll make his night.
Yeah. Please do, because he hit a home run. That was hilarious, man.
Well, thanks a million, everybody. It was a great conversation. I love every minute of this. It's all so special and so good. And maybe I'll be back on Moran Monday, and on Moran Monday, the fundraising goal will be 855. Which is a hell of a lot better than 1155. So thanks, everybody. Thanks so very much. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Y'all came through again this evening. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program and whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks, Sparky and Steve and Roger. Thank you. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, like and subscribe. That it's making a difference. Numbers are going up. That's fantastic and super-duper helpful. We want to expand the conversation because the more voices, the better it is. Like, subscribe, leave a comment. Use the like button at TuneIn if you listen that way. We're slowly climbing toward 1,000 listeners on TuneIn, and that's amazing. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, proud union shop, and coming soon, news about the reintroduction of the AIC Act. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Get your flu shot. Wipe down your surfaces. Help stop the spread of RSV. There'll be a vaccine by next year, they say. Or late this year, rather. I sure hope. It was so scary. Little Junie was sick. Wear that mask. You just heard. Roger and his beloved have done everything, and they still got it. But they've taken every precaution, and they're not so sick. Y'all do well, Roger. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance, 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And, you know, if somebody comes towards you down the sidewalk saying, not feeling good, rub a little ivermectin on your feet. The nausea means you're getting better. The dying means you've gotten better. Well, avoid that COVID idiot like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.